Hello, and welcome to the Negative World Podcast, the podcast about video games by the Nintendo fans at NegativeWorld.org. This is episode 74, and we're recording this on Monday, April 6th, 2015. I'm your host, Steven, and with me is my co-host, Joe.
Hello there, Steven.
Hey, how's it going, Joe?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing all right. Happy April.
Happy April to you. Time to catch those snails in Animal Crossing.
Ah, that's right. Is that what's going on right now in the old AC-verse?
Yeah, for me, yep.
You know, actually, we're going to talk about Animal Crossing a little bit today because I want to touch base on something that was announced, and I think you're in particular, you came to mind when I saw this, but
okay,
we'll get into that. But first, while Joe is the creator of a Nintendo fan forum named nintemple.com, today we have another Nintendo forum creator on, and that would be Negative World's own creator and god, Andrew.
That's me, and I believe some of you may have heard of that forum before.
Yes.
See?
And if you haven't, you should really check it out. I mean,
it would be amazing if they hadn't heard of it.
Yeah. You know, in theory, it's possible through the iTunes feed, I guess. But that's right. Negative World, our very own, you know, awesome forum that we know and love. Andrew, the guy. And he's here to join us today to talk about pretty much Nintendo Direct stuff from last week, but before we get to any of that, I want to let Joe make a very special announcement.
Joe? Okay, thank you. Yes, very special announcement. So, as some of you may know, I am an adjunct college professor, and so every now and then they let me make an event that I can do something cool with on campus, and hopefully for a cool purpose. And so this time we are doing a Super Smash Brothers charity tournament at St. John Fisher College in Rochester, New York, where I teach. And the charity that we're going to be benefiting is Child's Play Charity, which I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with. It seems to be kind of a go-to for a lot of these types of events in the gaming world. And I think the reason why it would be of interest to some of the listeners is on the day of the tournament, which will be Saturday, April 18th, starting at 1 p.m. Eastern, we'll be streaming the event live, and we'll probably put a link in the thread associated with this episode of the podcast.
Sure can.
And so people can tune in and watch the students play. There will be three brackets: one standard free-for-all, a doubles bracket, and then a special bracket in which you will get a little advantage based on how much funds you were able to raise to donate to the charity. And so it'll be should be kind of fun to watch, just to see some people play Smash. These kids are not by any means going to be experts, so you're not going to see the top-tier moves or anything like that, but you should see kids having fun for a good cause. And if that weren't enough, the event is scheduled to be announced by Negative World's very own The Old Man from Zelda and Mr. Mustache.
I was just going to ask if they were going to be participants in the event. On another calling.
Yeah, so perhaps, unfortunately, we can only have students be the participants, but you know, I put the word out. I technically extended an invitation to Steven if he wanted to drive in from Michigan to be an announcer. But
I'm kind of interested in joining the college so I can play.
Yeah, it's been disappointing because when I was walking around hanging up flyers, I kept, you know, like there'd be like staff members and other faculty members, and they'd be like, "Oh, that's awesome! Can I participate?" I'm like, "No. Sorry."
Could there potentially be a future?
But I'm like, you can donate, though. Please donate.
Yeah. Well, you can call them assist trophies if they donate. Anyone who donates and doesn't participate can be an assist trophy.
There could be an impromptu tournament for no prizes afterwards. Just because I feel like some non-students are gonna show up. So
street cred is the greatest prize of all.
Yep. So we will see. We're just announcing, just hanging up flyers this past weekend. The campus-wide email just went out today, which is the 6th of April.
Which means you've given me a freaking date to get this edited. Thank you.
Well, that's true.
No, that's all right. I'll make sure.
Any time before the 18th.
Yes. I guarantee somebody will have a chance to listen to this before the 18th. If you listen to it afterwards, then you're too slow.
Sonic style.
You should still donate to Child's Play anyway.
Yeah. So that's my announcement. So it should be cool. Right now I'm very nervous as to all the pieces coming together. But you know what? We're giving our best effort for a good cause. So no matter what, it'll be cool.
Oh, I'm very excited to hear how it goes. And of course, you have to tell us on the podcast that, you know, comes after that. So,
yeah, absolutely.
So that said, I guess we can move on. And last week is kind of the big thing. It was on April Fool's Day, no less, in the U.S. anyway. Nintendo had another Nintendo Direct, and I'm looking forward to diving in on all that with you guys, but we have one more thing to mention before we get into Now Playing, and I want to mention really quick that Jargon has once again kicked off a Negative World March Madness tournament. So I did one last year in the later half of the year relating to Smash Brothers stages, but before that, Jargon kind of started the whole trend, and he did it in a way of going through all the top Nintendo games, which is kind of the ultimate poll, I guess, you could run on the site. But this year he wanted to do something a little different, and so he's got third-party Nintendo games, although one section of the bracket, is strictly like true third-party games as well, to see if any of those can creep in and take the title as well. So it's pretty interesting, and I think a lot of people are even more polarized than you'd expect, because it's really hard to gauge who really likes what. Even, you know, I mean, Nintendo, you kind of like the Marios, the Zeldas. It's pretty obvious. It's more or less which one do you like best of the groups, but franchises are up against franchises, and it's just different this time around. So it's very cool. I'm excited. Right now we're in round two of the Green Hill Zone, so there's a lot of voting left. So by the time you hear this, there still should be rounds for you to participate in. I definitely encourage it. The more votes, the better. Keeps things interesting. But first, before we jump into Now Playing, I want to hear really quick your guys' picks for the current set of picks. So for the first round, we have Final Fantasy VI versus Mega Man 3. We have, for the second round, Sonic the Hedgehog 3 and Knuckles versus Conker's Bad Fur Day. For the third section, we have Resident Evil 2 versus Professor Layton and the Curious Village. And lastly, we have Okami versus Mega Man X. I know Zero, or Andrew rather, has voted already, but Joe, I don't think you've participated. So,
I think that I have.
For this particular threat, you have?
Yeah, I'm on page 2.
Okay, I haven't double checked to see who has. So, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
That said, Andrew, tell us your picks really quick.
All right, let's see. In the first one, I picked Mega Man 3. Which is kind of a tough pick, but I don't have the same connection to Final Fantasy VI as a lot of people do. It's sort of, I don't know, I played it like 8 years after it came out, so it's not really, I liked it when I played it, but I don't have the same, like, Super Nintendo nostalgia about that game as everyone else does.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to go with Mega Man 3. The second set, I haven't actually put much time into either of those games, but I know that I hate Sonic 3, which I feel sorry saying that because someone on the site gifted me that 1 year, and I tried, and I just didn't like it, so I voted for the other one.
Bad Fur Day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Third one, another tough set. I like both the games a lot, but Resident Evil 2 is kind of one of my least favorite Resident Evil games, so I just went with Professor Layton there. And then the last one was really hard, because those are like two of my favorite games, so that was sort of like staring at the screen for a little bit before deciding, but I went with Mega Man X. I have more nostalgia for it, and I've played it like, probably played through the whole game like 20 times by now, so it's just one of those games I keep going back to.
Sure. And what about you, Joe?
So for me, I also went with Mega Man 3 over Final Fantasy VI. Similar to Zero, I don't have the real bond with Final Fantasy VI that a lot of Nintendo gamers seem to have. I do like the game, but I think I just said in another thread a couple days prior how I was like not crazy about it, and always been a huge Mega Man fan. So Went with Mega Man 3. Also went with Sonic 3 and Knuckles. I love that series. And I've never played Conker's Bad Fur Day, so I couldn't possibly vote for it. I've heard it's fun and interesting. Maybe more interesting. I guess there's a certain kind of shock value, entertainment value there. But I've never played it myself, so I don't know. Resident Evil 2 versus Professor Layton. This was really, really hard for me because Resident Evil 2 is probably my favorite Resident Evil game, and I love the Professor Layton series, but that's kind of what it came down to, is that I love the Professor Layton series. Any one game, I guess it's a little easier to pick against, so I went with RE2 ultimately for that. And Okami and Mega Man X, again, both great games. I think just my love for Mega Man kind of triumphed over Okami, which is a fantastic game, but yeah, I just don't have that sentimental attachment like I do for pretty much anything with Mega Man. Yeah, so it was tough. Some of them were really tough, but those were my choices. What about you?
Okay, so I for the first one, I picked Mega Man 3. It's the one of my favorite Mega Man games, I guess. Maybe wrong tense, but and Final Fantasy VI, I've never played through, not in its entirety anyway. So that's kind of an easy pick there. Sonic the Hedgehog 3 and Knuckles wins over Conker Bad Fur Day because I've never played Conker. I might have rented it for like 3 seconds. I feel like I rented games as a kid and I played them for only a few minutes and then I just didn't finish. So I probably blacked out the rest of the experience, but I really would like to go back and play that. If that was an N64 VC title, I'd probably buy it in a second because I want to experience that, but definitely has to be Sonic 3 and Knuckles, probably because of the Knuckles part though. I was a big fan of Sonic and Knuckles, and so not so much the 3, but I think together it kind of trumps it there. For Resident Evil versus Layton, I went with Layton. I'm not really into the Resident Evil franchise. I know that it's a pretty good one, but I don't know. I think it's maybe the music, if anything, of Layton that gets me to win over here. And then for Okami versus Mega Man X, I went with Okami. I've barely played it, to be honest with you, and I've definitely beaten Mega Man X, but I like the pre-X versions of Mega Man more, I guess. Mm-hmm. And Okami, I think, is something I'd like to really dive more into. So that just happens to win, even though, you know, from an experience standpoint, it doesn't actually edge it out. But that's our picks, and definitely put in your own and keep posted to the site because one of these bastards is going to win, or one in the whole list. Maybe none of these will win, but something is going to come out on top. So that's March Madness in April, which is always how it works out, too. I never quite understood why they plan it like that, but
just what happens.
Yeah, I know most of it's in March, but and then actually we had a delay because Jargon was on an awesome vacation, so that pushed out even more, but he's back, it's going full force, check it out. Moving on, let's jump in finally to what the show is really all about, and that's Now Playing. We each got a couple of games that we'll touch on. Andrew, please kick us off.
Alright, I have been playing Dark Souls on my PS3 a lot. I don't know if, like, I feel like that's one of those games that, like, everybody's always talking about, so I don't know that I really have much more to add to it. I will say that these games are hard for me to play nowadays because I don't have, like, huge gaps of time to sit down and play games with, and these are the type of games where if you play for just an hour or even 2 hours, you might make absolutely no progress at all, and you might even end up in a worse state than you started if you lose all the souls that you had collected before your last save. So they're pretty unforgiving in that way. I don't know. It's an interesting experience for me because I think I like the core gameplay, and I like that it isn't like modern gaming where every 5 minutes is a checkpoint and you don't even have to really try that hard. It's like these games, there's a long time in between checkpoints. If you die, you go back and you lose everything you did.
Well, could you give me a quick breakdown of what the gameplay really is about?
Well, it's almost like a sort of hack and slash type game. So you're like you know, you pick the character, and there's different types you can pick. I forget what I picked, just some warrior or something. And then you have to equip with shields and swords. And that's, like, real-time action. So you're just, like, fighting with, you know, spears or swords. Or you could get bow and arrows. You could get different magic spells. So, yeah, there's a lot of different, you know, things you could use. But it's basically, at the end of the day, you're either, like, stabbing something or you're shooting it with a, you know, magic spell or something like that. So, but it gets really complicated because I think one of the things people really like about these games is they're very, like, detailed, and you have to approach every area, like, very cautiously. So, in a lot of games, you can kind of just run in and start, like, attacking. But in these games, like, even the really basic enemies can, like, really hurt you bad if you're not on your guard. So you kind of have to, like, always have your shield up, and you always have to be, like, moving slowly, and you don't want to let them get behind you, or, you know, you try to take them out, like, one at a time. So it's a very, like, methodic pace you have to go when you're playing, which I think is interesting, but it also makes it so you can spend, like, you know, maybe the checkpoint's not actually that far away, but you can spend, you know, a half hour because you're going really slowly, and then you don't even get to the checkpoint and you die, and you have to do it all over again. So that could be kind of frustrating.
So there's absolutely no kind of mid-action save or anything? It really just is strictly checkpoints?
Yeah, and the weird thing is, like, it's a really hardcore game in so many ways, and some of them I'm not sure I like. Like, a lot of checkpoints are hidden, so you could pass a checkpoint and not even realize you just passed one.
Is that, like, bad level design, or is that intentional?
I think it's intentional, because they do that with a lot of different things in this game, and a lot of people really like it. They feel like it makes it hardcore, and you kind of have to be really exploring and everything all the time. I think it's kind of, I don't know. It doesn't really, I'm not going to say it makes it a bad game, but it's not what I want out of a game, especially nowadays, where, like I said, I don't always have a lot of time. So, I mean, I don't want really easy games, but I would be a little happier if they were a little more forgiving. Like, it's already hard enough to get to the checkpoint in these games, so I don't understand why they have to hide some of them. That's kind of weird to me. Like, why not just make it obvious? And the thing I didn't really explain too well earlier, too, is a lot of the areas are kind of non-linear, and there's different ways you could go. So you could also just, like, not choose to go the way that had the checkpoint, and you wouldn't even realize that you totally just avoided the checkpoint, because you just picked, you know, you went left instead of going right at one point. So it's really kind of weird in that way. Like, I don't know. I don't like cheating in games, but when I start to, like, get really deep into an area and I'm not sure if, like, I haven't been finding a checkpoint, I'll just go look up online where it is, because I'm like, I don't want to run through this area 50 times just to find a checkpoint.
I say that all the time on the podcast, is that at a certain point, at my age and with my responsibilities, I don't have time to do that with every game, you know, like I maybe could have as a kid. So I want to kind of keep the process moving so I can finish a game and move on to the next.
Yeah, and it makes it hard. Like, I've put in something like 20 hours into this game, and I'm still in the 7th world. And theoretically, like, if you played and never died and everything, you could probably get to where I'm at in, like, under an hour. But I put in 20 hours because I had to do a lot of leveling up, and because there was a point where I was, like, really dying on this one boss, and then, like, I found out that I could have had a long-range spell, but I didn't really realize where I was supposed to talk to the guy, because he was kind of, like, hidden under this crag and some cliff down this way that you don't even have to go. And it's really a weird game like that. It's like you really have to explore everywhere if you want to have a chance. And I don't know. It's kind of hard to explore, though, because if you die, you just lose everything. So I don't know. But it's, like, it's weird, though, because it keeps pulling me back. It's like something about it I like, but it's also hard to play, and I haven't actually played it in a couple of weeks because you have to be in the right mood to, like, want to be tortured.
Have you played any other ones in the series?
I played Demon Souls, and I gave up on that one. And I only started playing this one because I heard it was more forgiving. And I think it is in some ways, like the checkpoint. in Demon's Souls, like, you could go through a whole, like, long stage that was like 45 minutes long, and then they put a boss fight at the end, and there was no checkpoint the whole stage. So you desperately fight all the way up to this boss, and then it, like, kills you instantly, and then you're like, oh, now I have another 45 to an hour to get back to that boss and try again.
I would...
You know, this game, usually, if there's a boss, there's a checkpoint, like, somewhere around the boss, although it's not always clear where it will be, and sometimes it will be, like, 10 minutes away, but at least that's better than Demon's Souls. So, I don't know, it's slightly more forgiving. But it's interesting, because I don't think these games are that hard. Like, when people say these are hard games, I'm like, I've only maybe died, you know, 20 times so far, but it's like so many things surrounding the game are so unforgiving that when you do die, it like really hurts you. It's not like some action games where you could just die, start again, die, start, you know, keep going like that.
So it's more like a tedium than a, you know, true difficulty. Or just a marathon or something.
We could get into a whole debate what difficulty means, but yeah, it's not like any given. I haven't come up against anything yet where it like killed me like 20 times just that thing. You know, like in the other games I played that are really hard, like I'll get to a point where I die like 20, 30 times just to pass like one boss or something. And I haven't really come up to that in this game yet. The one boss I was kind of stuck on, I only actually died like 3 or 4 times before beating it. It just seemed more because like you the checkpoint was like 15 minutes away from that boss, so it took like a couple hours, and like I also had to go find the spell that I didn't know I could even have by that point, and then I didn't have enough souls to buy it, so I had to like grind to get more souls. And you know, I'm making this game sound bad, but it's actually really fun because the actual core gameplay is really fun. Like each enemy like matters, and I haven't played many games like that where like, you know, every little area is really handcrafted too. That's what I like about, like, it's not one of these games where you're just running through endless corridors and you don't know where you are. Like each area is really handcrafted, and you run into like specific enemies that like only exist in that area, or you know, another thing I like about it is it's kind of like Xenoblade in the sense that you could get to like enemies that are way too strong for you at that point, and you kind of like sort of make note of it, and then you come back when you're more powered up and you can finally beat them. And maybe there's no point to that, but to me it makes the world feel more like real, as opposed to just like there's always enemies that are exactly at the right level for you to fight at a given time.
I don't know if you listened to the last podcast, but that was my complaint about the recent Pokemon game, so I know what you're saying. It can really change, you know, how a world lives and breathes when it's a bit more honest about it.
Yeah, it changes your approach too. Like, I got to this area that was this sort of like, I walked through this gate and there's this big like boar that has all these like metal like armor on it. It comes charging at me, and like in most games you'd be like, alright, I'm supposed to fight this game. But in this game I was like, oh, I have to actually avoid this boar, and then there's guys like shooting arrows at you and stuff, and it kind of changes how you approach that area. Like, now I have to dodge these arrows while, like, you know, I have to get behind these pillars and get out of the way of this boar. And now I have to make note that he's there, and, like, I can't just casually stroll through that place. I'm going to have to, like, maybe avoid it or, you know, come back when I'm strong. And I did eventually come back and kill him, and that felt really good because, like, this guy's been a pain in, you know, my butt for, like, the last couple hours, and now I can finally take him out.
Mm-hmm.
So stuff like that's cool, but it's kind of a mixed bag for me, though. I feel like these games are so praised that I feel like I should like them more, but they're kind of mixed for me at the moment.
That's all right, though. I know you said that in the pre-discussion we had yesterday, actually, that this was quite a game you were really into, and you wanted to make sure you mentioned it. So I don't think you've made it sound bad. I think you've just kind of explained it. It's just, yeah.
I think if I had more time, like longer gaming stretches, it would be easier for me to deal with some of the things that make it hard to get into. But it's a hard game to just sit down and play for an hour. You know, like you might not make any progress at all. And when I'm faced with that versus playing some of the other games I've been playing, I tend to like, oh, I have an hour to play. I'll just go play a game where I know I'm actually going to do something in an hour.
Do you wish it was on 3DS so you could just close the lid?
Well, that might help. I think a quick save would really benefit this game for me. But
even if it was like Majora's Mask, maybe where, you know, it's a quick save that lets you back out once and you come back in and then you just keep going?
Yeah, the funny thing about this game, you can't even pause it.
That's weird. Wow.
That's how hard, like, it's one of these hardcore games. I don't know if they thought, like, being able to pause might let you, like, stop and think too much, and you're supposed to just do everything in real time. So, like, when you hit, like, the pause button, the screen comes up, like, you know, the option screen, but it's only, like, it's sort of, like, real transparent.
Thing. Yeah.
And you see what's happening behind you, and it's still going on, you know? So you can't even, like, even if you have to go to the bathroom, you sort of have, like, sometimes I'll, like, make sure I clear out every enemy, and then I'll, like, run to the bathroom, and then I come back, and it turns out there's one that, like, runs into the scene, like, a minute later, and I missed them, and, like, I'm dead now.
See, now it needs to be on the Wii U, so you can take your tablet with you, and...
See, yeah.
This is made for Nintendo, it sounds like. It would solve all the problems.
True.
Although, I wonder how many kids, though, have been bitched at by their parents, you know, when they call on them for dinner, and they're like, well, I can't pause it, Mom, and they're like, bullshit! You know, and that whole record. I'm sure kids play this, even though it's probably an M-rated game from what it sounds like. But.
It is M-rated, and it's... I shouldn't say kids can't play it, because I might have been a better gamer as a kid than I am now, but I feel like kids would get really frustrated, but especially if they grew up on, like, modern gaming, where, like, you kind of don't have to try that hard to keep progressing.
Right. Well, you're playing something else, too, aren't you?
Yeah, I'll just talk about that quickly. I actually just finished it. I played through Teslagrad on the Wii U. It's an eShop game. I thought it was pretty good. It's not going to change the world. I'm not going to run out and tell everyone they should all go buy it right away. But it was kind of a fun sort of platform puzzle game. And the main hook was magnetism. So that kind of made it fun to move around. Like, you get more and more powers related to magnetism, and eventually you're, like, switching stuff and, you know, shooting up into the air. And because, you know, I forget how magnets work now. This is kind of sad. Like, two of the same polarity pushes away from each other. Is that correct?
Sounds correct.
So, yeah. So, in this game, if there's, like, say, a piece that's, like, a blue block or something on the ground, and so if you turn on that type of magnetism, it will, like, shoot you up into the air because it pushed you away, and that's kind of how, like, some of the platforming works. Or you have to move certain blocks by changing the magnetic poles and things like that. So it's pretty fun, and it has this kind of, like, sort of Metroidvania feel, although it's a little more linear than most of those games, but, you know, there's different ways to go sometimes. You have to get certain powers to open up new areas, and... You know, it's fun. It probably about 4 or 5 hours to finish the whole game. It's not super long, but it's an indie game. It's cheap. I think it was like $10-$12 or something on the eShop.
Yeah, I was looking at it on Steam, but I think maybe I didn't get it because it was maybe PC only or something. I think I talked myself out of it. I don't remember why that was, but with it being on the Wii U now, I really don't have any excuse.
But why would you not get a PC-only game on Steam? Would that still work?
Well, I have a Mac, so...
Oh.
I mean, actually...
PC.
Even that's not a... specifically PC, Windows and that sort of thing. But I do know that there's emulators out there that can run Windows-type things or programs and stuff, but I don't know how that would work with Steam, if it's even possible. So, you know, I'm kind of stuck in the Stone Age when it comes to that, but it's getting better.
Well, don't worry, there will be a Mac version of the game I'm making, so...
Yes. Oh, yeah, you know what? I dabbled in it, and I didn't get to fully experience the demo you put out there, but I know you didn't get a lot of feedback from Mac people, and I still plan on doing that for you.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, from what I've heard, everything should mostly work on Mac.
Yeah,
the same way on PC when you build in Unity, although there might be some small differences. But...
Well, the first level I tried, I only ran through it once when my girlfriend was here, and that was part of the reason I didn't, you know, continue for a while, but it did run fine, and I was just getting a hang of the controls and everything, but I'm looking forward to talking about that game with you on the podcast sometime soon.
Yeah, that's fine. But yeah, I guess those are my games. We don't need to go much more in depth than any of them, but I would say they're both good games, but, you know, each of them, I'd say Dark Souls, just the way it's set up is tough. And then Teslagrad, I feel like it's a really good game, but it felt like maybe just a little, like, more could have been done with it, I guess. Like, it's hard to explain because I don't have any specific complaints, but it's also not, like, one of my favorite indie games ever or anything. You know, it's just kind of like, it was there, it was a good game, it was fun to play through.
Well, sometimes it's all you need.
Yeah, it did its job.
Not everything's got to be mind-blowing, you know.
Yeah.
So, Joe, then, you've been playing anything mind-blowing lately?
Sort of. So, I'll give you my update on Hyrule Warriors, and then I'll tell you about a game I've been playing on Steam recently. But, yes, I was continuing on with Hyrule Warriors, and as many of you might remember from the previous podcast episode, I was very high on this game. I was extremely impressed with this game. And as you may tell from the use of past tense, that has changed slightly.
Why? Not to be accusatory, but
yeah,
let's
hear really,
this out.
Nothing really that the game did. More like what stopped happening. So I finished I can't even remember what the different names for the different modes are. I think it was Legend Mode is the one that has the
story mode, with it.
Yeah. So I think I had just finished that by when we recorded the last podcast. And if you remember, that's what I was really most impressed by, was how these characters that don't usually get a lot of development at least had some personality that you could see, you know, fairly consistently level to level, you know, just little glimpses into what their characters were like on a slightly less superficial level. And that's what I was really enjoying. And that's what I was really happy about. That's what was really keeping me so engrossed in the game. And so when I moved on to adventure mode, I believe it is, with mm-hmm. The huge map, you know, that part of it just kind of goes away. I mean, that's just the nature of those different modes. You know, it doesn't really have that.
So you realize what the game's really about, and then and that sours a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, you know, even sour, it might be the wrong word for it, but it's just, you know, it's just a lack of. It's just that thing that really kept me enthralled is no longer there. So,
well, it's not breaking up the gameplay either. You're hacking and slashing and beating thousands of enemies, but there's nothing there to kind of entertain you midway, give you a bit of a break.
Right, and gave me sort of a sense of purpose of what I was doing while mindlessly hacking and slashing. You know, that is, again, what's missing from that mode for me is it does feel, you know, it feels like I don't know if tedium is the right word, but it's like there doesn't seem to be that sense of purpose for all the different screens on that gigantic map. It feels kind of like going through the motions, and since I think there's only a certain number of maps that are available in that, you know, you end up kind of playing the same ones over and over again, and it doesn't necessarily feel like your objectives in that specific match are really tied to anything. You know, it just kind of feels kind of arbitrary. I mean, some of them are even literally like you know, just like beat these certain five key enemies or something like that, and then it ends.
Right. Well, and there's even weird matchups that wouldn't make sense from a story standpoint. You know, mm-hmm. like I think Ganondorf and Princess Rudo team up, you know, at one point and so I can see where that just breaks the whole
exactly
universe.
Yep.
And then just to add to what you're saying, I've beaten almost every map, every square in that original NES mm-hmm. map. I have a few that I haven't unlocked. I have a few that are unlocked but I haven't completed. And there's still a lot of things for me to collect, but you do replay the same levels just to get that bomb so you can unlock that other reward.
Right.
And I don't know what happens when you finish. I know a few people have on the forums, but
okay.
You know, now that you think of it, part of the reason maybe I haven't rushed back again after my second wave of excitement was because what am I really... I'm just there to unlock items, which gets old after a while. That's why even in Animal Crossing, I eventually stopped trying to get everything in my inventory, because all I'm doing is just going through motion. So,
right. It is weird to be, you know, to think about what the motivation is, because like I already have more weapons than I care to manage, you know, like it's even that gets a little bit tedious. I don't really enjoy it. Like sometimes it's like, I have to decide what minute difference between these two versions of the same sword are going to give me maybe a slight advantage. And I know you confuse them and everything, but even that you kind of have to almost save them up so you get the right, you know, so you can put the right abilities on one weapon, you know, to be
there's a lot
smart
of time
about it.
Deciding which ones to delete when you've hit your max 10. It's true. And I know that you don't really dabble in amiibo very much, but when you have amiibo, the Zelda-themed ones will unlock stronger weapons, but in the regular ones, or the non-Zelda, will just unlock more just standard stuff. But you can get special items every day, up to 5. So if you had, like, every, you know, the Sheik, the Zelda, the Link, the Toon Link, maybe is there another Zelda one I'm forgetting, but eventually we'll have Ganondorf. So if you had those 5, you'd get all the 5 items, and eventually you would just be ranking in these, you know, level 3, right, level 2s, and you wouldn't even need to unlock them, really. I mean,
right,
very specific ones you would need to unlock. But still, yeah, at that point, it's just going through a super motion, you know.
Right, yeah. I will say the part about it that I do really like, even though it's not really enough to propel me forward like the Legend mode was, but I do really get a kick out of the seeing all the little 8-bit versions of all the the modern characters, and just even when you go into battle, how you kind of see 8-bit versions of enemies that weren't in those old games, and they kind of move towards each other, everything like that. I really do like exploring, trying to find the secrets that were in the very first Legend of Zelda game, and trying to think back and do my best to remember, you know, okay, was it this rock that you use a bomb on, or do you burn this bush or what? So the presentation of it is great. I mean, I get a kick out of that.
Well, they could make a whole NES style Zelda game right now with those new pixel art and everything, you know, for the, and throw in all these new characters, but it'd be probably an insta buy.
Yep, that would be amazing. So I am backing off my previous proclamation.
So not the best Zelda. Okay.
Not the best Zelda ever. It's weird. It's a weird, you know, because again, it's not that the game has really done anything wrong. It's just the polish, I guess.
Is showing.
Yeah, that could be.
Because I mean, you know, if you took away the story that you experienced with those characters, what do you have left? You got Dynasty Warriors gameplay, right?
Yeah.
So,
which I don't hate. It's not bad, but after a certain point, maybe the repetition just, you know,
agreed,
gets too much. So.
I'm sure I'll find a third wind, but I had my first one, and then I had my second around the time you were, really into it as well. And, you know, I've had a few out-of-state trips, and, you know, so my time with it has been broken up, and I can't see myself running back to it now.
Right, yeah.
Especially because the DLC's all done, too. And so there's nothing new bringing me back to peak, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to move on. So this is a game that I've only played twice now. It's a game called The Dream Machine. It's available on Steam. I don't know if it's for Mac as well. It might be PC only. Not really sure.
Well, then I'm just going to step out for a second.
But have either of you heard of this game before?
I haven't,
nope.
No. Yeah.
What kind of... Give me the genre.
Okay, so it is point and click, which is a genre that I enjoy very much.
Definitely haven't heard of it.
I only discovered it because I was hanging out at my sister's house a few nights ago, and her husband will play point and click games every now and then. And so they were playing it. So we kind of played through Chapter 5 as a group, the two of them and myself and Amy. And it took us, you know, I'd say 2 hours maybe just to try to get through part of Chapter 5. We didn't even get through the whole thing. So then when we got back home, Amy and I decided to download it for ourselves. And so last night we got up through maybe midway through Chapter 2. But so the premise of this game, it's a very interesting story, and I'll try to be very vague because, of course, uncovering the story is part of the point-and-click adventure. But basically, you are a new resident in an apartment building, and something mysterious is going on related to the owners of the building being a family that does research on dreams, and they do this research on their residents without telling them. So basically, then what you have to do is try to free the residents from this sort of unsolicited observation by going into their dreams and severing this sort of dream connection to this observation device, the dream machine, if you will. So probably what's most striking about this game initially is that if you look at the graphics, it's I don't know if 0% of it is done with CG, but it's all essentially stop motion of real things, you know, real little pieces of cardboard and wood that the artist who created this game crafted, and just animates through stop motion, which, you know, seems like an extremely time-consuming process. And if you look at the release dates for the various chapters, it was released episodically, and it shows how much time it must take between these episodes, because chapters 1 and 2 were released in 2010, and chapter 5 just came out November 2014, I think it was. So,
jeez.
Yeah, that is a little bordering on unacceptable, in my opinion. But getting into it now, we can at least go, you know, we at least have these first 5 chapters that we can just dive into.
And just to mention really quick, the game is for Mac and PC. I'm looking it up right now. And it's about $5 for each chapter. The first two are bundled together, which might be a lot for people to, you know, when it all adds up. But there is a package. You can get all 1 through 6. 6 isn't out yet, but you can get the whole thing for $17. So that might be the way to go if you're interested in it at all.
Yeah, I would definitely suggest that way, because really, you know, the first chapter only took an hour or a little bit more. It was kind of an introductory chapter, to be fair, but it's hard to say how much, you know, how long these other ones will be. But I am very impressed, not just with the presentation, but with the game itself, because the puzzles, it feels, you know, challenging enough that it makes you think. Certainly when the four of us were playing the other night, you know, we were really all working together, kind of racking our brains, trying to figure out what to do next. But what's nice about it is once you figure out what to do next, really none of it felt like out of the blue. You know, everything felt like something you had been given at least some small hint of a clue for, but you just weren't observant enough, or you just weren't thinking of it in the right way initially. And I think that's the best kind of challenge for these types of games, you know, where you feel like you could have solved it, but you just had to think about it more. It also does a really good job of, once you're done with something, like once you're done with an item or even a room, the game does a really good job of just locking you out from that. So you won't even have the option of using an item whose use has expired. You know, it'll just disappear from your inventory. Certain rooms you just won't be able to go back into because they're just done, you know. And so that's nice too, because it keeps the experience streamlined. It keeps you from wasting your time. And the story of it is very interesting. You know, I mean, I genuinely want to see what happens next with this whole thing. And so we're excited to keep playing it.
Well, sounds really interesting. I see there's a free demo as well, so I should probably look into this at some point.
And yeah, I have a hard time imagining, you know, usually with these, when we talk about these games, usually you can kind of think of like, well, you know, if you don't like this, it's not for you. If you don't like this, it's not for you. I know there's people who just are not interested in point-and-click adventures, but it's, again, I feel like it's streamlined such that, you know, you don't really get lost in this abyss of options or anything. So it's something that I think you could even casually play through and you know, still find rewarding. So,
And hell, I just give it a lot of credit for being, you know, the first of its kind to do a true, you know, stop motion clay model game. I mean, I guess point and click is the way you got to go, but it's just pretty awesome that someone could have the vision to put it all together.
Yep, pretty crazy. And also, to the creator's credit, I think you can see some of this on their Twitter feed. But you know, like when you try to use an item on something, in a lot of point and click adventure games, it'll just say like "does not work" or something like that. It doesn't really give you much to go on. But what they've actually done is, you know, written out the one or two lines of text that it takes to tell you specifically about why that combination doesn't make sense. So again, it just gives you more to hold on to so that you can better make that next decision and end up wasting less time trying things that aren't going to work. You know, you have some indication of why it didn't work, and that can keep you on the right track.
Sounds like that could be one of the reasons why items that are no longer of use might go away as well, because then they don't have to worry about writing the, you know, explaining why that old item won't work.
That's true.
On everything.
That's true. But yeah, I think I just saw a Twitter update from the developer within the last couple of weeks that said, like, you know, just finished writing 265 different combinations of, you know, of this does not work or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, that's impressive. So. Yep, but that's all I got to say on it. We're going to play more tonight, probably after we finish recording here. So in future episodes, I will keep you all posted.
Cool. Looking forward to it.
Yes, and so what have you been playing, Steven?
Well, I guess I could talk about a few different things, but just to keep things moving, the main thing I want to talk about really quick is something that came out just last Thursday. It's called Box Boy.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe Box Boy, depending on how you take exclamation points. It's a pretty simple looking game for the 3DS, and don't let that fool you. It's a very cool puzzler, and I called it an indie game on Miiverse, and then was totally schooled in a little life lesson that it's apparently made between HAL. It's a partnership between HAL and Nintendo, so it looks kind of indie, like something you'd find on Steam or something, and yet it's made by these bigger companies. And pretty much what it is, you are a box, and you can generate certain boxes from your body, and if you push them against walls, or you can use them to raise things up, or you can use them to move yourself around the level, and you just use that snaking ability to solve puzzles, and there's so many different ways to do that. Each level itself has a specific way to do it, so let me correct that, but there are so many different mechanics in this game, it's pretty mind-blowing, honestly. I went into it not realizing exactly how much content there was, and I thought I had read like there's only like 7 worlds or 5 worlds, and so I'm like, okay, I'm going along. And there, in the main game, because there is some bonus content, but in the main game it's like at least 15, and each one's got at least 7 levels, I think. So there's so many different things, and every world introduces a new mechanic, and you only start kind of seeing the old ones show up in kind of collaborative levels that have a few different ideas near the end, just to kind of test your challenge or your ability to be challenged. And it's just got a, you know, really cool kind of funky music that's very mellow. It's got a very simplistic art style, but the puzzles are top notch. They're so good. I mean, I beat the game already, and
you described the music as mellow, but I'm just curious what genre, like what.
It's kind of like an
8-bit
genre. It's kind of like an 8-bit thing.
Chip tune.
Chip tune, yeah. And but it's not like in your face. It's not like Mega Man where it's, you know, really action packed and, you know, energetic. But it's just, you know, it's very chill. You know, you're not going to be annoyed by the music while you're going through the levels and everything.
That's kind of, would you say it's similar to Kirby, which was another HAL Laboratories thing?
In essence, the music itself doesn't sound anything like Kirby games, I don't think.
Okay.
But in fact, I would say Kirby is almost too fast for it.
Interesting. All right.
But it's just kind of... But it's not super slow either. It's hard to explain. Definitely just, you know, listen to it when you play it, and you'll understand what I'm saying. But
gotcha.
It's just a very calm, relaxing game, and I found myself challenged just right. Like, I never really got stuck. Only once or twice did I actually, like, go to the next level before going back to get the crowns, because every level has a crown or two that you have to collect. And the thing is, every level sets you with a certain number of blocks you can create from your body. Sometimes it's only 3, sometimes it's 7. And that's how long your trail can be. And that relates to the type of puzzle you're about to experience. So, you know, you're going to have a challenging, fun experience no matter what that is. It's not that the longer always gives you the advantage, because sometimes it doesn't matter. But despite that, you have a maximum level in each of the stages as well, like 23 or 17 or 9. And as you use those blocks to get through the level, that gets eaten up, and you have to try to get the crown before you use all those up. And then once you get the crown, you can use as many as you want to try to finish the level. But usually crowns are equally spaced out. And it's usually pretty easy to manage that as well. I haven't found myself too pissed off that I keep running out of this or that. But it's still kind of cool. It makes you have to be efficient to earn the crowns, and that's okay. I'll find myself getting to a level and then finding myself just using too many to get to the crown, and then it takes it away, and, you know, kind of like thinking, okay, well, I'll just reset the level. Maybe I can take a block away here, and I was being a little sloppy there, and I'll move myself more efficiently, and then that extra block is what does it. And since you can actually make blocks and then actually retract them, I guess, into your body without actually making them solid and thus counting the blocks, you can actually, at the very end of some levels, you'll find yourself with only one block to spare. You'll extend yourself out 4, you'll reach the crown, and you'll come back in because it didn't actually solidify. Because when you expel them from your body, you create the snake, but it only is confirmed when you hit like the down button or something, and then you make them solid blocks, of which you can then jump on and move around. And then when you create more blocks, those disappear and new ones start. So that is pretty much the whole mechanic, the whole game. But like I said, there's a lot of different challenges and gimmicks and ways to go about things. It's very fun. There's unlockables, different costumes you can get. You can unlock the music. There's certain challenge modes you can unlock. And you earn all these with little points that you get by beating the levels efficiently. And it's not too hard to collect those points, so I never found myself not able to buy something that I wanted to. But I think, again, that's a good thing. I'm not looking to have a bunch of stuff locked out. I just kind of want to keep moving. And with a game like this, it kind of scratches the same itch as Cross, which it's something I like to kind of just next. But I still like the challenge of each one. And I don't want to find myself too stumped too long or anything. And so this is a good game for that. I'm really glad I picked this up.
What is your take on the black and white? I mean, is that... Why that style choice, do you think?
It keeps it simple. I think it makes it very clear of what you're looking at. And I think if it was... any, you know, if you 3D-ified it and gave it, like, actual ground, or, you know, made it more like a side-scrolling game you'd find today, it'd be too distracting, maybe.
Okay.
And maybe it wouldn't be, I don't know, but...
I mean, it looks like they use some color, like, while you're expanding the blocks, right? It gives you, like, a red number of how many, like, well, when you reach your limit and stuff. And...
Well, certain ways you snake your blocks, if it's on a certain ledge and it rests there, you can actually kind of zip up to it to pull yourself, almost like a hook shot or something.
Yeah, which looks cool.
And it's not always the end of your snake, because if you can hook shot to a ledge, quote-unquote, and then move past it with your snake, and then you still only will hook shot to that ledge because the extra part of your snake is kind of hanging over. And so it makes it really easy to know where you're going to go when you hit this button and everything. So I think it's there to make it as little... bad English. It makes it so there's as little confusion as possible with what you're doing. And then that distills it down to just the core puzzle mechanics, and that's what it's there for. In fact, there's very little story. I mean, these are little box characters. It's kind of like one of those Steam-type games where you interpret the story into your own whatever the hell you want to make it, really. And I definitely would recommend people go check it out if they're into puzzle games at all. So, very fun. It was, how much was it? It was, I think, $5 plus tax. So it's decently priced and everything, not too crazy. It's perfect for on the go, I'll tell you that. But I played a hell of a lot of it not on the go as well. So have either of you guys looked into this at all? It sounds like you have, Joe.
Well, I remember it during the Direct. And
Well, yeah, that's when it was shown.
Yeah.
I didn't even know about it until Wednesday. And then I was like, well, shit, I'll pick it up. Why not?
Yeah.
Something new, something small.
Yeah, it does. It looks fun and interesting. I don't know when or at what point I would pick it up, but I'm certainly interested in it.
Well, I definitely would recommend it, pal.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to get it, but I don't actually have my own 3DS at the moment. So.
That will hinder you.
Brandon lent me a 3DS, which has been cool, but I've just been using it for cartridge games. I'm not going to like load up the eShop and put my eShop stuff on there. So.
Yeah, it does get a little messy, I guess, with the rights and everything. You can't. It'd be kind of cool if you could. I don't know how they would do this at this point, but if you had like an SD card you could devote to and make it like a cartridge, an e-cartridge, that you could then take to any machine, but you can take it on or off, or you can take things off it. You can only put things on it on a specific machine maybe, and at least that way you could bring your games elsewhere.
It probably wouldn't even be that hard to like transfer my account to the current 3DS, and then when I get a new one, transfer again. But I'm just like, I don't know. I have enough to play without going through that hassle, so...
Sure, sure. Well, maybe talk him into buying it himself and then just playing it.
well, this is one of his, like, 8 3DSs or something, so...
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's got, like, a trench coat with him, right?
Yeah, he shows up at the party and he had, like 4 of these or something. And so, I don't know, like, he probably has a game on a couple of them, but they all have their own accounts or...
Right, right. So, I've also been playing, I played my 3DS quite a bit lately, and I've been playing, I mean, Pokemon Shuffle's been there, and, that is what it is, that hasn't changed really. There's, another, special event going on right now for a Blastoise night, if I even said that right, but, what I've really been trying to dabble in is, The Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask 3D, and there's not much to say really about the game itself, because, you know, I mean, I played it many, many years ago, and it's the same game. But I will make a few comments on, I guess, how the upgrade is. Graphics look really nice. The camera works pretty well, I'd say. I'm playing it on the new 3DS, so I definitely can use the little camera nub or the C nub or the nub, whatever you want to call it. And it's a little weird, honestly, with the different menu item or the items and the slots. If I remember correctly, I feel like I had more control or more button access to different items. The C buttons and everything, right? Didn't those have you can actually assign items to all those as well as A and B?
You could in Ocarina of Time.
Yeah. Yeah, and so Majora's Mask I think was the same way, and in this you have an X and a Y. But then you also have 2 more slots that are touchscreen only, and it's a little weird to have to go like stretch the thumb for it. It does kind of break what I'm trying to go for. But I guess it could be worse. They could not have those buttons at all. So playing like the Ocarina, it makes sense there. It's very cool that you can pull up the songs and then look at them to play them, because I don't really remember all the different patterns and everything for these songs. There's quite a few different songs in this game, so I don't have to worry about all that. There's separate screens for mask management, item management, like there was before, but it's just very easy to go between them all in the menu. So the menu is one of the nicest upgrades and nicest features of the game. And if you're a fan of Majora's Mask and you kind of have any itch to play it, that's probably reason enough to buy. But the 3D is really nice as well. I've had a little ghosting, though, and I think once I find the sweet spot as far as how far it is away from me, that kind of goes away. But it's not a ghosting in the sense of, like, the 3DS stabilization isn't working, but it's just, you know, the 3DS has always had a little bit of issue with, like, dark backgrounds.
Against light.
Yeah.
Foreground
so
stuff.
So, like, when Link is, like, the first time I noticed it was when you just get the Bomber's Notebook and you get your little passcode and you're going to the observatory. And there's that dark little underwater aqueduct kind of thing. Right there, first time. It's kind of annoying, but whatever, you get past it. At this point, I have made it to the beach, and I have my third mask, and I remember just how weird it is that you find a Zora drowned pretty much, on the ocean. You drag him to shore, and he plays you a song and goes, "Whoa!" And screams What else does he say? He goes, like, yay! Like a really weird, whatever, okay. Nobody remembers that, apparently.
I've not played Majora's Mask, so I don't know.
Andrew, can you back me up here? Do you...
I played it a long time ago.
You don't remember that, though?
I don't really remember much about that game, which makes me almost think, like, I usually don't rebuy games, but I feel like maybe I should, because this might be, like, almost brand new to me at this point.
Sure, sure. Well, you know, it's cool, and you know, if you don't remember how it played before, then that means that you're gonna have no problems with the swimming as a Zora, which I do have problems with because they took away the cool kind of dolphin-like swimming that you could do. And yes, it was a little tricky to control sometimes, but it still was way fun. And now it's much more boring, kind of backstroke type swimming or front stroke, I guess, and it gets the job done, but. I don't know, they kind of nerfed it, and I'm not sure why. I guess to make it user-friendly or something. Speaking of nerfing, they did change the way you save. And this, I guess, really depends on how you feel about the whole thing. I know that there are some people on the forums that are pretty hot about this topic, but what they've done is they've, if I'm getting this right, the owl statues now will save... I think before the owl statues would only do a temp save, and then to actually fully save you had to go back to the first day. But in this game now, I don't think going back to the first day does any saving necessarily, but you save at the owl statues, full stop, and if you want a temp save, I think you would just, close the 3DS. I don't think you can actually do any sort of temp saves and then actually leave the game and come back, so... I mean, it changes up a little bit of the dynamic of what the game was intending to do before, but it really it just streamlines it, and it's fine. I don't feel like I'm less of a gamer because I'm saving before, going into this temple or something like that. This helps me be a little more efficient with my time and not have to be redundant, which this game is actually built around redundancy to an extent because you are reliving the same couple of days. But the Bomber's Notebook is also upgraded, and I'm not sure how to use it entirely yet, but it definitely is made to, I guess, cater to those who want to be completionists, and it makes it easier to see where people are going to be at what times, and it keeps track of if a bomber, one of the little bomber kids, if he says, I heard this and this, and maybe someone should go check it out, it'll put a little note in your Bomber's Notebook that he said that, and then you can forget for a couple weeks that he even said that. You can go back in and say, oh, well, maybe I should go here now. It just gives you something to do. So it almost is like a quest-starting book, or quest-starting action. And that's cool.
I think it's another one of the reasons why I'm tempted to go back, because I really loved Majora's Mask at the time, but I know I probably only finished, like, half of the side quests. I mean, I remember... Like, for instance, the masks. I remember I only had, like, 5 masks or something at the end of the game.
Oh, man.
There's, like, how many of them are there? 20 or something? 30?
20? I don't know if it actually reaches 30, but it's definitely between those two numbers.
Yeah,
only,
so
like, 4 of them are mandatory.
There was probably a lot of stuff I just didn't do. I tried to do every side quest I found, but I guess I didn't find many, or I didn't...
A lot of them start by a specific moment in time, and then you can kind of figure out the rest from there. So yeah, if you never happen to be, at the farm in the first day, which is possible because it's blocked by a giant boulder, and you can get past it after a certain point in the game, or you can wait till day 3 when it's open already. But you've missed certain events, so if you never actually make it there, whether intentionally or you got stuck or you just didn't think to go there, because, there's a lot of places to check for the 3 days, then, yeah, you might miss a whole series of side quests that you otherwise could totally have completed. And unlike...
It's kind of what's driving me. I don't know if I'm going to go back, because I have so many other games I want to play, but it's kind of like what's in my mind. It's like, there's a lot I sort of missed the first time, so maybe it would be worth going back again.
Yeah, the only thing I'll say to finish that off is it's nice because, unlike maybe Xenoblade... There's actually seems to be a limit to the side quests that exist. I feel like Xenoblade must be creating new ones despite the fact. It's like sentient and it just does it. But
Jardine claims he finished all the side quests in Xenoblade.
Who made that claim?
Jardine.
Really? Wow.
I finished every single one I found, which in the process of finishing, new ones would keep opening, and sure. I finished them, and I finished everything I did, so I did a lot, but I don't think I got everything, and he claims he got everything. So.
Wow. Well, I know there's near the end of the game, there's a lot of weapon-based quests I won't go into, because it's kind of part of the story, but and they're optional, but they kind of relate, and I know it takes a lot to get those done, so kudos to him for doing that. But in Majora's Mask, there's definitely a set amount to get all the masks, you end up doing all the side quests. So if you're missing a mask, there's a side quest you're missing. But once you get those, you're good to go. And the Bomber's Notebook this time around makes it even better. And those Bomber kids never gave you hints before, and now they do. They'll run up to you when they see you, and if you talk to them, they'll say, "Hey, I heard this," and then it'll just pretty much add a new little thing for you a hint. It's not anything super concrete, you know? So
I kind of wonder, though, like, if I went back and I completed everything, if that would take away some of the mystique of that game thing, because one of the things I loved about that game when I was playing is it just felt like anything was possible. Like, so much was constantly happening, and you talk to the right person at the right time, and some whole new quest starts. And it felt, like, endless, you know what I mean? And then, if you actually find the limit, like, where it ends, then maybe some of that feeling dissipates.
Sure, sure. And, you know, as we get older, like we were saying before, that our patience with certain games might diminish. And so I guess that might be more appealing nowadays, but it does ruin maybe the mystique that you're talking about. I guess it depends on the person, but...
Because I remember, I'm not usually a completionist, so in both the Metroid Prime 1 and 2, I didn't get everything. I think I got most of the stuff, but I didn't get everything. And then Prime 3, there's that room near the end that sort of just tells you where to find everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to that room, and I only had, three things left or something. And, somehow that made the game seem less interesting to me, because I was like, I thought, there was still so much I hadn't done, and it was such a bigger game than I thought. And then you get there and you're like, no, I pretty much did everything except, a couple of walls that I didn't break open or something to get these other ones. But
I think it just depends on the person.
Yeah.
But I still recommend you check it out. And maybe only do half the masks and just leave the rest of the mystique, but do more than what you've done before.
Is it, I guess, I don't know if there would be a difference between the old game and this game, but is it sort of you to find the quests to start them? It's kind of you sort of have to be in the right place at the right time, or is there hints where you should be? Like, does anyone ever say, "Oh, have you ever tried going to the farm on day one?" You know, any of the characters in the game hint at that?
Well, they don't really reference the days because they don't have a concept that life is really going to end for them, so they don't realize that you're going through the cycle. But I think there was some hinting before, especially when you started a quest, that they would kind of give you a hint of where the next part's going to go, or where the next part of another one is, because some of them intertwine, which is really one of the cool facts about the game. But now there are more ways to get hints, again through the Bomber Kids or whatever, and whatever their actual name is, I forget. But they're optional, though. You don't have to talk to those guys, and you can leave it up to the mysteriousness of it all, and really just, fully explore an area on day one and then the same area on day two and etc. But, some might call that inefficient, some might call that exploration. So, I know for one mask, for instance, you have to be in a certain area at 1 in the morning on day one, which starts a ripple effect that affects the next 3 days. But in particular, you get a special mask on day two. I think you get it on day one at that moment. But then that mask can be used later. Even if you go back, of course, but it can be used later that sequence to kind of kick off other side quests. So it's cool, man. It's one of the greatest things about the game, and I really wish they would elaborate on that more for a future Zelda game.
It's definitely that whole hook. I feel like there hasn't been as interesting of a hook since, and I've liked a lot of Zelda games since, but I always felt like, because to me that seemed like a more complex progression of the night-day system in Ocarina of Time.
Right.
And, I was always thinking, well, what's next? They're going to do something even better. But they sort of just kind of never went in that direction again. I mean, there are some night-day cycles in the new Zelda games, but they're like more of a step back in a lot of ways. It's more basic. So I would like to see them like take those ideas and really run with them sometime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they might, maybe with this next one, considering they're kind of holding off on it. So, who knows? But that's my piece on Majora's Mask. Let's take a quick break, and then we're going to dive into the meat and potatoes of the show, which is the Nintendo Direct from April 1st, 2015. And we're back, and we've got a lot to discuss. Let's just jump right in, full force. We've got the Nintendo Direct, and as we've done in the past, we'll shift through various key points of the Nintendo Direct. You know, we'll just talk about our thoughts, feelings, speculations. You know, if you feel that we've missed something critical, let us know in the forum thread for this show when it goes up. The best way to do it. And I think the first thing we should talk about, guys, is the Super Smash Bros. DLC announcement. I guess the expose, because there was so much going on there. First, let's dive into the update itself. There's going to be an update coming out on April 15th, which is, what the hell is today, the 6th? Yes, it is. So, you know, only 11 days from now, or 9 days, I'm sorry. I can't do math. 9 days from now, they're going to be adding the downloadable content in general. It'll be the first, it'll be the update that unlocks the DLC capabilities of the game. And while Mewtwo, for certain folks, will be there, it's going to pretty much unleash the customizing of the Mii fighters. You know, right now there's certain costumes and everything that you can find in-game, but they've taken some time to make some new ones based on different franchises like Mega Man, Mega Man X, Zelda, Xenoblade Chronicles. And you can buy these outfits in different packs for your Mii fighters. Some of them fit all Mii fighters, some of them are just for the gunner or the brawler, etc. And, you know, some of these things look really cool. There's a Majora's Mask you can wear and everything, so it kind of expands on what's been done. And just really quick, the pricing for that is all 8 outfits will be, individual, like, themed packs will be 75 cents per game, per pack, or $1.15 for that pack on both games if you happen to own both. And then you can also bundle them together, $6 per game, or you can do the $9.20 for pretty much all outfits in all game in both games. And I'll let you guys comment on that in just a sec. But the other things that the update's adding is tweaked character balancing, as well as sharing on the Wii U, which is going to be able to allow us to share photos, Mii fighters, replays, and especially custom stages. So that's pretty exciting. I guess I really should just run through the other parts of this. Mewtwo is coming back. We knew about this, but we got the final unveiling, and that's going to arrive April 28th for anyone who's not on Club Nintendo and did the whole thing that they've been advertising for a while. It's going to be $4 a person, or a game, or $5 for both games. And for Club Nintendo earners, of course, it's free, arriving on the 15th, which is in 9 days from this recording. Then there was the surprise announcement of Lucas being back as well, which pretty much opened the door for future DLC in general, and it wasn't just a one-time thing with Mewtwo. And it also brought back a fan favorite that a lot of people were really missing out on and really disappointed when the game released. So that was quite a surprise. He's coming June 2015, which is the plan. So let me stop there and just throw it to you guys. What do you make of this? Do you care? What excites you? What doesn't excite you? what Mii Fighter custom outfit do you want to see in the future? Andrew?
Man. I hate to sound like a downer, but I'm not sure that I actually care about any of it.
Okay, Joe.
No, but like,
I think we can move on.
Bastard.
No, like, so I don't really play Pokemon, so Mewtwo's like kind of like whatever to me, and I think I probably could have got him for free anyway. I forget what you were supposed to do, but I didn't do it, so I must not have cared that much.
You have to register both versions on your Club Nintendo account.
Well, I just tried to do that recently, but the site's been down for like a week or something, but,
it's either owned by GameStop.com or healthcare.org. I'm not sure, but that's probably why.
So, Lucas, interesting, but I never played Mother 3 because Nintendo never brought it to the West, so
Wait, you're not a Japanese guy from Japan?
Costumes. I'm definitely would not pay for a costume. If it was free, that would be fun.
I think
that what interests me the most about all of this is sharing the custom stages, but I never actually sat down and made one, so it would just be me playing my friend's stages, maybe. I wouldn't.
Well, hey, Plute's got the best Smash Ball stage, so that alone's getting me hyped for this update. I want his version, because although, you know, we all make our own version, but my version stinks compared to his.
The thing is, like, I honestly didn't know that you couldn't share them. I just assumed that was it from the start. So it's like, it's cool news, but it's like, oh, I thought that was already there. to me, honestly, the best news is that, like, this exists so that maybe something I want will come eventually. Because they obviously are already asking who the next character should be.
Yep. Yeah, and we'll touch on that shortly. But you're right. They've actually given us the opportunity to speak up.
So there might be someone I care about, and then to me the most exciting thing would be new stages. And whether that's gonna happen or not seems unclear. But I think if they're doing all this other stuff, I would be surprised if they never added new stages.
That's a good point. You know, they did say etc. I'm pretty sure I didn't write that in myself. I'm pretty sure they actually made that point. So. That could be, well, okay, well, no, that etc. I'm sorry.
I'm not necessarily talking about right now, but I mean that
right.
This opens it up in the future, you know, maybe 6 months or a year from now. Oh, we've built a couple new stages you can download. Because that's something I would pay for. Like, if they're like, oh, we have a stage pack, kind of like the Mario Kart thing where you get like four new stages and then maybe a couple costumes or whatever, and it's one pack and you could just pay whatever. That I would buy. And I bought all the Mario Kart ones, and I don't regret that because the first set was really cool, and I'm guessing the second set's gonna be cool. So,
you know, I kind of wish they had done that from the start, though. You know, with Mewtwo, tie the level in with it. I know that there's Pokemon stages, so they don't necessarily need to do that. But if they were to do a character that was completely in a new franchise that they're adding in, I would demand to see a level from it. You know, it wouldn't feel right if it didn't have that.
Well, that's actually what I was thinking, too, because everyone said, you know, I know we didn't get to this yet, but they're asking about which character you want, and I'll hold off saying who I want, but that character I want does not have a stage in the game yet, so to me, I would want both if I was going to get one.
Or maybe even an item. Not that all items are really designed around franchises, and maybe in many ways they're not, but or can we see new assist trophies, you know, which would be kind of neat. I would like to see them expand on all the core facets with this, really, because I do feel, and this will probably be part of our later discussion, but I feel like that the game is so chock full of stuff now that I'm okay with them adding these on, although certain pricing tiers and everything do bother me, but I think that it would be silly for them to stick with just levels, or I'm sorry, just characters, and then outfits. You know, I'd like to see the other areas expanded. So, you know, to touch upon the costumes really quick, I think they're cool, but I was excited when I thought that all of them were 75 cents total per game and 115 for everything. But when I found out that was individual, I was like, that's kind of bullshit. Like, I would not pay $9.20 to have 8 Mii Fighter costumes on both my Wii and my 3DS. That's way too much.
I don't think I'd pay 75 cents, to be honest.
I would pay the 115 to get it on both if it was something particularly awesome.
And I might if they had costumes for, I might pay 75 cents. This is as high as I'm going. If there were costumes for characters I used, but I don't even use the Meat Fighters. So.
Well, okay, right, and that, you know, that's gonna be a niche, and it's okay. I think it's okay that it exists for those who want to use it. I definitely don't feel like I'm missing out by not participating in that. And I think like the Proto Man is really cool. So, say you wanted to make your own Proto Man to fight against Mega Man, and here's your opportunity. But the fact that there's a Mega Man skin for your Mii Fighter when there is Mega Man in the game doesn't get me that, you know, that hook. Like, I think they were maybe going for.
Well, that's Mega Man X, isn't it?
Well, no, there's Mega Man and Mega Man X, I thought. I thought it was both.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's something related to both. Like, the Majora's Mask, that might be cool, but I don't know if I would actually go around. I mean, put a beer in me, maybe, or a couple beers, and I might be like, ah, it's 75 cents, who cares, at that point. But I don't know if I could, if, like, right now I would just boot up my Wii U just to do that, you know?
Is that why Nintendo was sending around free beer after the Direct?
That'd be sweet. But, sorry, I got excited for that, but... Especially when you compare the pricing to $5 for a character, or actually 4 for a character, 5 for on both, that doesn't line up, I think, with $9.20 for costumes versus the 5 for a character, which has a whole new move set and taunts and all that. There's so much more that goes into it. So I feel like they're a little high.
Even that, well, how much was the Mario Kart? I forget now. It was like 20 for both?
No, it was, no, it's shit. Like it was 13. Yeah, 12 or 13 for both.
Yeah, see? Like,
8 for each or something.
So let's say it was 13 and there were 8 courses and then you got all these new characters and stuff. Like, even that to me, and then to say like $4 just for one character, that seems kind of steep. Like, I don't buy DLC. Every, like, my entire DLC purchasing history to this date is like, something in Valkyrie Chronicles, something in Mega Man 9, and this Mario Kart stuff. So it doesn't interest me at all, but Mario Kart did, because I felt like they totally did it right there. And like $4 for one character to me is like, eh.
You know, I'm not sure where I feel, where I kind of sit on that. I'm okay with it, I think, but if there's a lot of characters coming, that it will be kind of a letdown if it would add up to a significant portion of the original purchase. And, with Mario Kart, I mean, it's just a damn good deal, no matter what, but, I guess maybe characters are less, I mean, they're physically different, but they don't really control differently or anything, but with a, you know, a fighter, there's so much more that goes into it. I think maybe that's where they're coming up with the price justification, the time and effort, and then, of course, how people kind of connect and relate with their characters and really build, and like Hammerlord, for God's sake, I mean, he takes every character and does that, but you know, the way that he really almost develops a relationship with the fighter in a deep fighting level, so maybe that's why this is different than Mario Kart,
I guess. I don't know.
You're not taking my bullshit, apparently, but
I mean, like,
I'm not saying you have to like it, I'm just saying that's what I think they're going for.
Yeah. But I, if you break it down, though, the Mario Kart, it was like less than $2 per new course.
And that's if you ignore the characters and the different carts, and yeah, you know.
Hmm?
Yeah, and they had some. Yeah, they had the Zelda. I mean, Link. They introduced.
Well, that's why I think this price point would be way better if they had a level to sit with it. You know,
yeah.
Kind of a pairing where you're not just buying a character with a moveset, and that's it. I mean, I'm getting Mewtwo for free. I don't really care that much for Lucas, so I don't see why I necessarily should have to get him. I used him a bit in Brawl, but, I mean, this price point does make me want to kind of wait and see what other ones would show up. And, you know, I don't know, maybe after a few beers, though, again, $5 won't matter. I don't know.
I also think what worked so well for the Mario Kart DLC was that it was, you know, it was really like a next step for the whole series, because it was the first time that you were going to have these other games, these non-Mushroom Kingdom characters in Mario Kart. So it was like completely uncharted territory, whereas, you know, I mean, two of the characters that have been announced so far, they were both in old games, weren't they? Mm-hmm. Wasn't Mewtwo in Melee, something like that? Yeah. Yep. So I think the shine on it is not quite as bright because of that.
And that's a good point. And maybe they justified the cheaper price to open up the doors to testing the waters for that expansion. While with Smash Brothers, they're not trying to do
right.
that. Which
yep.
sucks for the consumer, because then it means that their general pricing, you know, ranges are more like Smash Brothers, but they're making the exception for Mario Kart.
Yeah, that was in the back of my head too. We'll see. We'll see over time. If
it was
the case.
Smash, they could do something new and have just Mario expansion. See how it flips it around? Mario
go the
Kart
other way.
All Nintendo characters. Mm-hmm. Then they could test to see if people wanted Mario only Smash Brothers.
So you could pay to take away characters.
Yeah, basically. Then,
Maybe the two franchises will somehow flop.
Well, the way some people talk about, and I think people are okay with it now that it's just DLC, but like the way some people talk about when, like, should there be a Nintendo cart comes up, it's like, I think some people probably would pay to take away everyone but the Mario characters. It's like, some people are really against the idea.
You know, I was one of them for a time, but I've...
You weren't, like, angrily against it, though. I mean,
no,
you just had a preference, right?
I stupidly felt that... And well, I shouldn't say stupidly, because I guess... I don't know, others might agree with this old adage of mine, but I thought that they should be separate games or something. And maybe that was me being selfish and just wanting more. But the way that they've handled this DLC for Mario Kart has absolutely made it clear to me that this totally works. And it actually could breathe fresh life into it more than anything else could.
I mean, I think the thing, not to go off on a totally separate topic, but the thing that was cool about it to me is how it's not just new Mario Kart tracks with a different skin. They really like took things from each franchise and tried to work it into the game, and like I think that makes them more creative. Just by what can we do with this franchise?
Even just having rupees instead of coins was like stupidly impressive.
It's just a nice touch. I mean, there's so much quality and detail in it.
Yeah.
The end of the Mute City racing stage has a special victory theme based off the F-Zero series. The Excite Bike track. That track will kind of change up every time you go to it.
You know, it took me I only even found that out like a month or two ago when I was playing at like someone else's house and they were telling someone else who had like never played Mario Kart, they're like, yeah, this track changes every time. And I was like, what? I guess I just thought I hadn't quite memorized it yet.
And so with the new Animal Crossing level, I actually watched during lunch today, the game explain kind of review discussion video over the trailer that they released for it. And it too is taking the whole Animal Crossing aesthetic, putting in detail after detail after detail, and then and just kicking its ass. I mean, not only will the stage boot up differently every time into four different seasons, each one's a time of day, although it doesn't actually go based off real time of day, I don't think. So if you play at night, it still could be summertime in the daytime, but I think that's okay, because the Christmas looks best at night, for instance, with all the lights and everything. You wouldn't want to necessarily get the combo where you're, you know, 11 a.m. on a Christmas day, and it just wouldn't look as good. So, so there's four different seasons, and there's subtle touches to everything. The trees change, and like in autumn, there's leaves on the ground. In the summertime, the trees are in full bloom with fruit, and if you hit a tree, then fruit will fall out of it. There's item boxes that are floating, but they're not just floating there detached from anything, but they're floating hooked to balloons, just like items would be in Animal Crossing. There's so many subtle nuances that are just wonderfully pulled off that, I mean, Nintendo Kart would be stellar. And I guess reining us back into the DLC discussion and everything in the Nintendo Direct, we'll get back to the Smash thing in a sec, but the Mario Kart DLC that they announced, they just reiterated that it's coming and that it's going to be $7.99 for the individual purchase. But the cool thing is that they moved up from the May release to April 23rd, which I thought was nice, because how often does that happen?
I know.
So that was a cool little surprise. Considering we were in April 1st, so it suddenly wasn't next month, it was this month, which is just makes a world of difference, you know, from like a psychology standpoint. And so they confirmed that, you know, we're getting Villager, we're getting Isabelle, we're getting Dry Bowser. we're getting four carts. One's the City Tripper, one's the Streetle, and I think they both were featured in the video. The two cups are the Crossing Cup and the Bell Cup. And I haven't seen the video or the screenshot from when they first announced it, so I don't really recall what was in there, but they only showed us that Animal Crossing level, so there's still seven other tracks that are yet to be kind of unveiled and experienced, so it's very, very cool.
I wonder, it would seem weird to do this, even though if they didn't do it with the other ones, but they're calling it Crossing Cup and Bell Cup. Aren't those both Animal Crossing things?
The Bell, well, yes, but I wonder if the Bell Cup references...
looks like the Cat Suit power-up.
Yeah, the Cat Suit power-up, yeah.
Because as you say, it might be kind of weird if they had two different Animal Crossing courses. But then if they don't, then it's kind of like... It's a little weird that they put three new franchises in the first set of DLC and just one new franchise in this one. But.
Yeah, and with two characters being in there, I feel like there might be another Animal Crossing course of some kind. But who knows? I'm not sure what else they could do.
Yeah, what would be left to cover?
If they take me to the city, I'm going to be pissed.
I wonder if there's going to be a surprise, like some kind of like balloon fight course or something weird.
I believe it.
I could totally see Nintendo do that.
I mean, F-Zero and Excitebike, I feel like we're both that. Excitebike in particular, but, you know, and we might even see old tracks return too, because we did with the first DLC pack.
I mean, like surprises in, like, it's just going to appear. Like when with the Animal Crossing DLC, and like, oh, and the day it comes out, it would be like, oh, there's also this other franchise we're doing here.
A Dark Souls track, wow.
There's a Bayonetta track.
Well, just, I mean, it does have me wondering how, you know, could they go, could it eventually be not just Nintendo Kart, but just, you know, I mean, the way that there's third-party characters in Smash Brothers, could there be Castlevania track or whatever?
I feel like Nintendo would release a true Nintendo Kart and then do that as DLC before they would actually like make it built in and everything. I think they would slowly build on this idea.
Yeah, I could totally see them doing like Sonic or Mega Man, but I wonder if Sega would even want to give Sonic to Mario Kart since they have their own competing kart.
Well, you technically can, because they also announced that for Amiibo lovers, there's going to be new racing suits. And those would be like Mega Man, Pac-Man, Sonic, Toad, Wario, Villager, Rosalina, Bowser, and Olimar. And so Sonic, you know, Sonic and Mega Man and Pac-Man, those are third-party characters who will have at least the representations in the game, which is not the same thing. Yeah, they'll be in racing suits. Because right now you can do like a lot of the basic ones, Donkey Kong and Mario, Luigi, Yoshi. You can do all those and then...
Kirby.
Yeah, Kirby. But, you know, these racing suits are pretty spiffy, and I know Olimar's not coming out till like, September, but I was showing that to my girlfriend today, and I was looking closely at it. The helmet looks like the spaceship from the game, the, can't remember the name.
Dolphin?
The Dolphin, yes, thank you. And then there's a red Pikmin hanging on the back. You know, I'll tell you a quick story in a sec, but yeah, there's a red Pikmin hanging on the back as if it's like being launched, so it's really funny and cute and everything. A quick aside: yesterday I got home and my nephews were over for the holiday, and they were playing Pikmin and Pikmin 3 or whatever. And I said something about the game, and I said Pikmin this or that, and then my nephew, he says to me, "Oh, so that's how you say it?" And I said, "No, it's actually Pikmin, like you've been saying." But I like to say it this way, and I'm wrong. So
well, at
I
least
told,
they're not calling it Pikmin like a lot of people.
Neither of us called it that. But Joe, for you, I made sure he grows up knowing the right way and doesn't take my Pikmin. But
hey, you know, I'm not even an expert. I mean, I don't even know for sure. I just kind of know what I've heard. So
I don't know. I like to.
Do we even know if that's the right way? I mean, what do?
I don't. I feel like they say Pikmin, the little Pikmin do, but. I've heard people have the debate, and it seems that Pikmin is what people like to argue about, so maybe it is that. Or maybe they're just loud. Anyway, so let's not digress, because the last thing that with the Mario Kart DLC that they announced, and this is free for everybody, is 200cc mode, which is like super-duper fast mode. I mean, just watching the videos makes it look like it's going to be a bit of a challenge. you've kind of got to plan your power slide way in advance. You know what I mean? And how do you guys feel about that?
I think I'll have to play it to have an opinion. Right now, I kind of feel like 150 is already a little fast for me. I'm not good enough. I just feel like the way the courses are designed, 150 sometimes feels like it already doesn't really give you enough room to do certain things.
Mm-hmm.
So at 200, I don't know. I feel like I'll probably try it out and stuff, but I can't imagine. Like right now, 150 is the only way I play. Like that's my, the others are too slow for me. That's like the right way to play for me. Can't imagine 200 will replace that for me. I think I'll still just end up sticking with 150 most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. It looks too much. I'm sure it'll be fun for a laugh, you know? I mean, it looks like there's some crazy scenarios you can get yourself into at 200cc. And I think it's kind of neat to actually have a mode where you want to use the brake, because having a brake button has almost been a joke in Mario Kart for a long time. But I am not, I mean, I just have felt like 150 was perfect, you know, and maybe that's because the tracks are maybe more designed with 150 in mind. Maybe going forward, there'll be more of a mentality for 200, but I feel like 150 is so comfortable, and I worry that the thing that I know that turns people off to Mario Kart, like the reason why I can't get some of my like family members to play Mario Kart, is because they feel like it's too random. Like they don't really understand, you know, that you can kind of work on the skill of Mario Kart and then, you know, finish accordingly. But they just feel it's all like luck. And I feel like 200cc is just going to make it feel more that way. You know, I feel like it's going to be more chaotic, more insane, and yeah, and that's going to make it.
Well,
even
I presume
harder,
that
so.
The items are going to, you know, be sped up as well, which is going to give you less reaction time, and as shells are flying across and bananas are being plopped down, it will feel even more random than it already is.
Yeah, and I'm not looking, I mean, I don't really derive any more joy from that either, so.
I'm curious
about
it.
Yeah, so I kind of, we'll see what happens. I'm not really excited about it. I don't know, it's probably here to stay in the future. I can't imagine them making this big reveal about it and then not putting it in the future games. But I guess you never know with Nintendo. The one thing I will say that is kind of interesting about it is seeing people react like, well, this is the last nail in the coffin for F-Zero, you know, because they got an F-Zero track and now you can go at this speed. So this is like...
Yeah, I've made that joke.
Confirmed. I mean, maybe it is. Maybe this is like a compromise from Nintendo's end, but... It's an interesting conclusion, and it makes for interesting discussion.
Yeah. I mean, I don't feel like it's a nail in any coffin. You know, I think there must be something else going on with their lack of F-Zero love. But, I mean, they continue to put Captain Falcon into the Smash Bros. Series, and they took the time to even reference F-Zero in Mario Kart. So, you know, I mean, it's... I don't know. I guess we'll see, but... I think 200cc, at the very least, was a surprise. I don't know exactly where the desire came from or like who was requesting it.
Didn't the method of reveal almost feel like a joke? Didn't it seem kind of like almost like they were kidding? Mm-hmm. The way they were like, you know.
Yeah.
Like 100, 150, now 200.
And considering the day that we Americans got to see it, it could have been... play it off that way for sure, but
yeah. Yep.
But you know, the thing I want to point out though is I'm happy to see it just existing, because Nintendo's continuing to support a lot of their big titles well after the release, and maybe that's just part of the new world we live in. But instead of having one Mario Kart for each generation, we're getting a Mario Kart, then they're actually continuing to support it for a while, which kind of helps keep it fresh throughout the length of the generation. And it's not all pay content either. Yes, there's characters and levels, but they're also taking time to add more racing suits if you happen to buy an amiibo, or the CC, the 200cc mode, and I really appreciate that. With Smash Brothers, maybe it's more functionality based, you know, with the sharing of content and things like that. But at least they're giving options out there. And then amiibo, of course, is it's a whole separate thing, and You do pay for the price of admission, but then you can use that in other applications, so that's kind of an interesting concept there. I like to see Nintendo trying new things, and it's still different than what other companies are doing, I think. So I give them credit for that.
I kind of do worry, though, that I'm not going to like 200cc, but it's going to become the sort of go-to that other people want to play on when I'm like
could be the final destination. Could be the final destination.
Fox suit, final destination, no items.
Yeah. Yep. I don't know. I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, if it does stick around, there is that risk of them making that the new hard mode, and so if you could complete 150cc, but then that's not the end of it in the next games, it does kind of, like, it just moves the goalpost a bit. Which maybe is what the franchise needs, and maybe they'll refine 200cc mode for the future. Who knows? I guess.
I think it needs a good battle mode. That's what it needs.
Amen to that, brother. Mm. We need a 200cc battle mode. Is what we need. Maybe not that, but let's jump back up really quick and finish our DLC. Our DLC. You know, roundup with what was talked about with the SmashBrothers.com. You know, you can vote for your fighter that you'd want ballot thing. That's the most roundabout way I've ever explained something, but...
Totally made sense.
They want us to submit characters that we want in Smash Brothers as DLC, which I think is a great, you know, offering. Instead of presuming and everything, they're giving us the chance to vote. And they didn't limit it to just Nintendo characters, so they've really kind of opened up the door a little bit, depending on, of course, you know, legality's sake, but... I think it's just cool.
Maybe I'm missing something. You know? I thought that they did that. I thought Sakurai said recently that it was just going to be first party. Mm-mm. Did I dream that?
I think you dreamed that because there was some debate about it. But you know, one of the people that that owns my character, one of my characters, flat out, you know, said, "Hey, I'd like Nintendo to do this." And I think after that happened, there is more discussion, but I'm pretty sure, like, the website itself says video game character. They would have probably explicitly said Nintendo character if they wanted to make that specification. Okay. And we have third-party characters in there now, so I think what they said is that if it's for a third-party character to be put in there, they have to have a certain level of cred. You know, just like Pac-Man and Sonic and Mega Man really do have that level of... Although Mega Man wasn't originally... Oh, he's always been third party, but he was on Nintendo first.
There was a time when people probably thought of him as first party.
So. Right, right.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I was just wondering about that because there has to be some kind of like. It's certainly not a binding contract to have whatever character wins this thing if it's someone that they just can't get the rights to, then.
Well, they flat out said that. I think they're going to look at the top picks and then say, well, which one do we want to make?
Yeah.
They're not going to say, well, whatever wins, or, you know.
Now, just to be completely cynical, wouldn't it be, has it crossed your mind if they were just like, yeah, do this contest, meanwhile they're already working on, you know, Rayman or whatever it is, and then in a couple months they're just going to be like, and Rayman wins!
Oh, that's definitely the glass, like, with a hole in the bottom kind of empty, but.
I don't even think that, I'm just, just amusing.
I would presume that they might be working on some more characters, like, say, even Rayman, and then if he's one of the topics, they move to the next one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think that they're going to just, okay, we got lucky here, you know? Because they're going to want to sell as many characters as possible. So
I think I'm a different kind of cynical with my data-based background and data background. I'm thinking, like, how are they actually going to figure out who people are voting for, because they didn't give a list. If you have a list to pick from, you could write a program that, like, you know, just, you know, vote, like the poll, like on Negative World, like polls and stuff.
Yeah.
But to just let write-in votes in, like, people have to literally, like, human beings might have to go through and look at these.
Yeah, but I'm sure that there's a program that could be written that could sort them by what looks close, you know?
I mean, you could do something like that. I'm kind of curious how they're going to handle that. And then I also feel like, I don't know if you guys tried, but I went and voted once, and then I refreshed, and it was like looked like it was going to let me vote again, and I didn't. But
yeah,
I'm like...
you can vote as many times as you want.
Then that's like the worst. Like, polls like that have no like basis in reality. It just ends up whoever's willing to sit there and put the most insane amount of time into getting their stuff.
Well, and that's why they have a section, I think, for you know, explaining why they should be in it. And so if they, you know, if you just see scribble there, I bet you they'll just write the character right out, or that entry, if there's just gibberish, you know. So if people are just trying to spam that,
copy and paste every time.
They can also, they can probably delete any duplicates, like exact duplicates, you know. So I'm sure they can. I'm sure they can find a way to get through that.
I'm kind of skeptical in that I don't think much is going to matter beyond a couple that, like, you know, I don't know who actually would be the front runner at this point, but you know, there would probably have been a lot of people voting for Ridley if he didn't already end up as a boss. And I think there's going to be certain Nintendo characters that are just going to get so many votes that they probably aren't even going to look at much else. You know what I mean?
Well, let's get into that. I wanted to ask you guys who your top picks would be. And let's start with you, Andrew.
Well, my top pick is the same one it always is, which I want a character and a course. And it would be someone from Advance Wars, probably. Because he's just the most, you know, he's the most iconic, like, main character type character from that game. But I just think the game needs representation. It's a series that has, if you count Japan, it has 7 games, I think.
Wow.
And it has no Smash Brothers anything except, like, an assist trophy or something.
Mm-hmm.
So that, to me, would be the main one. I have a lot of, like, just, like, far-out ones that I would love to see that I don't think have any chance.
Well, give me, like, 2 more.
Well, like, on the indie level, I think the most likely one would probably be someone like Commander Video, but I doubt he has a real chance, even though they're, like, super pushing it. I noticed that what did they change? They used to be Gaijin Games, and they changed it to Choice Provisions or something, but I noticed they're like pushing every, you know, on their Facebook and Twitter and everything, please go vote for Commander Video. And right. I don't know if like that is even likely chance, but yeah, I guess who else would I want for Nintendo? Probably just, like, to me, like, I don't think the big popular characters are that, and I know some people want Toad and stuff like that, but I'm like, eh. Like, to me, it would be some, like, obscure character no one would really want, like, you know, Mallow from Pushmo or something, you know?
Or Gino from Super Mario RPG?
I was always more a fan of Mallow from Mario RPG, so we'll go with Mallow from Mario RPG, or Mallow spelled differently.
Or a weird, like, hybrid where they're sewn together, the two Mallows.
I think Pushmo would be a very interesting Smash Brothers stage too. They have like moving blocks and stuff, but that's,
dude,
like,
yeah,
that's you just like erased one of my answers. I think that's a good one. I didn't even think about that. You know, you could have a Pushmo Crashmo kind of level. Yeah, so some blocks will fall, some blocks will pull out, and it could be random, or maybe you can actually grab them yourself. You know, that'd be kind of wild, just to create like a diversion.
I think it's interesting, though, that I can't think of any single character that I think has, like, a good chance that, like, I'd want. Like, all the ones I'd want, I think, have no chance at all.
Well, Joe, do you have any more hope for your picks, or?
Not much hope. So, I have 4 listed here, just because at first I wasn't sure if third-party characters were allowed, but and there's probably ones I'm forgetting, but off the top of my head, I always thought that Simon Belmont would make a good character in Smash Brothers,
mm-hmm.
And that's what I was trying to go on some of these picks. Like, there's a lot of characters like from Professor Layton, or even like the Zero Escape series that I think would be very interesting and very cool, but wouldn't probably make for very good brawlers in a fighting game. So I thought Simon Belmont would. That would be nice to see. It would be interesting to see what kind of version they go with, because there have been a number of renditions over the years. Kind of started as more of a Conan the Barbarian look to him, and then he kind of evolved into the more Japanese, you know, stylish kind of design. So, but that would be cool. The other ones on there, I do have Toad on there.
I'd like to see him too. I've heard some people say Captain Toad, but the whole lack of jumping as a core mechanic of the character doesn't really make any sense.
I don't know how you would possibly.
I don't want him taking his backpack off every 5 seconds just because you're jumping constantly.
Right. That would be weird.
I mean, they can make him like a little Mac, where his air game is really weak, but.
If they brought in regular Toad, wouldn't it be weird that Princess pulls him out to block with?
They update it with a color swap, bam, blue Toad or something. It's we want legitimate Toad as a character.
Legitimate,
yeah. Legitimate Toad.
So they can even put that text in there, make it legitimate Toad.
And then the others I had Cynthia from Pokemon. She was from the Generation 4 champion. And she's my favorite, you know, pre-made character from the Pokemon franchise. So, and I think, you know, depending on how they would use her, you know, she uses dragon types. And so that could be interesting because they haven't had any of those, I think, usable.
Let's get a Dragonite in here. Hell yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So that would be pretty fun and a little bit different from some of the other Pokemon
characters. Would you want to make her like the original Pokemon trainer from Brawl?
I mean, it crossed my mind, but, you know, she looks like a character that would be agile enough that I think you could actually make her the fighter, and then, but, you know, just her, like, her special moves could be, like, throwing out Pokemon or something like that.
Or what if she uses, like, Pokeballs and other items? Like, I can imagine, like, throwing a Pokeball at your head and then catching it again, you know, like a boomerang almost, just, like, to mess with you. And then in her final smash, she throws out like all 6 Pokeballs from her belt.
That would
be
amazing.
6 to like kick ass. That'd be kind of wild.
That'd be awesome. Yeah. Also, just occurred to me, I mean, she could maybe even like ride on one of the, you know, it could be like a
Dodrio. Not a dragon, but okay.
Yeah, whatever it is. I mean, that could be the character, you know, was like her riding on the back of something.
Hmm.
That would be interesting.
It makes me want Mario on Yoshi, but that wouldn't work either. But.
Okay,
just quick side note. What if in the next Smash Brothers, certain characters if they're on a team can actually combo up like that, if it made sense? So like Mario and Yoshi could work together in a co-op situation as a team in some random fashion, I don't know.
And then we could get like for third party characters all the Simpsons in, and then they could team up.
And then their final Smash would be sitting on a couch.
I was referencing the old Simpsons game. Don't you remember that?
The arcade game, of course I remember that. But when you said
the
group,
up.
I imagine the couch. Yeah, you're right.
Moves.
Depending on which two were there, or at least the only two at a time would team up, right?
Yeah, in the game, I think.
Yeah. So go ahead, Joe. Sorry.
Oh, that's okay. Last one I had, and this is just kind of me trying to find more first-party ones, but I would love to see Wart come back from Super Mario Brothers 2, and that's largely just because of I would like to see Wart make a comeback, just so that Mario could fight someone different for a change.
Yeah, I'd rather see Wart than Ridley, personally.
Mm-hmm.
I think he'd be more interesting, and again, having Ridley in that one stage just kind of ruined the idea, I guess. You can't really color swap the Ridley like you could with Toad or something.
True.
That's a Ridley.
I guess you could.
True.
Yeah, okay. That'd be a workaround. That'd be a pretty cool workaround, honestly. I guess, you know, I did think about Wart on my drive the other night, so you're not alone there. But my picks kind of seem to mimic what I've been hearing, too, after I thought about these, but my first one would absolutely be Banjo and Kazooie.
Mm-hmm.
Just to have them in there would be a great third-party kind of thing. I know that the guys who made the original game, a lot of them are working on that new game and that new with the new company, and they're very Nintendo-oriented, at least in mentality. I know that they're looking to release on everything, but it'd be a great opportunity to see those characters used in a proper way again. I guess I guess proper is debatable, but in a way that I guess, you know, feeds off the nostalgia a little bit instead of nuts and bolts, which, I don't know, just disappointed me. But plus, there's a lot of different moves you could do, because in the games themselves, there's so many different moves you do. So you could easily incorporate that into the Smash Brothers franchise, and then having levels and stuff based off that would be mind blowing. But as far as Mario enemies go, I think Kamek would be really great to have. Kind of, maybe he would float, you know, in the same way that Bowser Jr. kind of rides in his cart. Maybe Kamek could float on his broomstick across the stage, and then, you know, do different things here or there. And I don't know, but it would be really cool to see him. I'd even he's in the one stage though, isn't he? I think in the Wii U version.
Okay.
Or is he in? I think he might be a stage.
Like, Hazard, whatever.
Hazard, or you know, in the new Super Mario Brothers U stage, I believe he's the one that changes. I don't know. I forget now. But so maybe that wouldn't work in that sense. But hey, whatever. Shovel Knight would be. Yeah, palette swap, I guess. But I think he'd be great, and plus it'd be kind of cool for Yoshi to have a, you know, like an enemy of his own, which doesn't really exist in the game. So, and Kamek has always been kind of his nemesis to some degree. But as far as third party goes, Shovel Knight would be an awesome addition, and I guess I don't know any other reason besides I love the game and the series, and he'd be a really unique fighter. And then, as you were talking about the third-party guys, I was thinking maybe Juan from Guacamelee would be kind of cool, since he's quite the fighter himself. But I don't know if that... I mean, that's not really a Nintendo even centric. I think the Wii U was like the last system it even came out on, and there isn't a lot of awareness for the game compared to other guys, so... I can't imagine that would get picked, but I still have to do some voting, and I'll probably throw all mine out there. Hell, I might even throw out your choices, just because why not? And it'll be interesting to see how that goes.
I'm right now looking at two top 10 lists I made 2 years ago. One was third-party characters I wanted, and one was first-party characters. I'm not going to go name them all, but a lot of the ones you guys just named were on some of my lists. So, like, Ward is on there, and Simon Belmont, and Professor Layton.
I thought about Layton, too. I don't know what his moveset would be, but he'd be pretty cool. Just to have some music in that game from him would be cool. But
the neat thing, though, is both the number one choices I picked ended up in the game, because it was Mega Man and Shulk. So mm-hmm. I got both my number one choices picked.
There you go. Then you need to get voting, because apparently your opinion matters.
Well, and my number two here is Andy from Advance Wars. So.
Well, push it, man. Get your students that you you work with to vote. Just make that a whole day.
I'm not sure that that seems like some kind of corruption.
I don't think so.
It becomes a big thing. I'd be fired, and teacher.
I think between you and Joe, I think you could indoctrinate a lot of Advance Wars players.
I haven't pushed Advance Wars on my students yet. I did get some of one of my students actually played VVVVVV just because of my recommendation, so that was cool.
That'd be kind of a neat character to have in there, just for the level or whatever that would accompany him. But
yeah, everyone flips on the ceiling.
Yeah, that'd be wild. But anyway, so. Is there anything else you guys want to say about DLC in general with what Nintendo's doing right now? Because these two games are the really hot ones that they're doing, that they're pushing this DLC agenda with. And Hyrule Warriors to a degree, too. And I know, Joe, I mean, we'll probably have many DLC discussions over the podcasts, but I wanted to at least open the floor up a little bit to you, since we keep talking about this particular topic. You said so far, but
well, I just I don't know what to say as far as I don't think it's worth it to try to dissect the specifics of it. But for myself and a couple of other people I've talked to since the direct, it just sort of feels like Nintendo is kind of going in a direction with their business model that, you know, we just don't enjoy or don't think we'll enjoy. And, you know, maybe we'll see what happens when we actually experience it over a longer period of time. But, you know, it just it's a weird feeling. I feel like I'm getting left behind a little bit. And that's never good. That's never a good feeling, you know, when something that you like very much seems to be going in a different direction. So,
well, are you able to express what your primary discontent is with the DLC as they've laid it out so far?
Yeah, like, well, what, I mean, I guess
what
you know,
feel
like something
you can't participate in.
Well, something that Mop It Up said that I think really summed it up well is that it's not a problem with the content itself. I mean, as far as everything that you have listed, I think, you know, while a lot of it doesn't excite me very much, I think literally the only thing that I don't like from a content perspective is the 200cc, because like I said, I think that may present some problems or, you know, some things that I won't enjoy. But the rest of it, you know, it's just like more. You know, what's not to like about more? As mm-hmm. I think a lot of people have said, it's, you know, even if I don't care to use Lucas, I don't have to use Lucas, but maybe it, you know, makes it a little bit more interesting. There'll be one more person I have to learn how to fight the strengths and weaknesses of, you know. So all that is great. I mean, the Mario Kart content, my God, it's like, I mean, some of that stuff is probably going to end up being my favorite when all is said and done from the eighth installment in that franchise. It just looks so good, especially the upcoming Animal Crossing stuff. I'm excited out of my mind to play that. It's just, you know, for me, it comes down to, and again, I don't want to go into this too much, but it's strictly a mentality, and it's one that is sort of at odds with a certain business model. And if I can try to sum it up, it's simply that, you know, when I purchase something, when I buy something, especially something that I really, really appreciate, like games that I kind of consider to be like works of art, I like having that whole thing contained. You know, I like making that purchase and knowing that that whole kind of entity is in one spot. The same way that when I hold a certain book that I really admire, it's like you're holding something magical and you can contain it right in your hands, you know? And when things are kind of chopped up and doled out, you know, with little pieces over time, it just takes that feeling away. And like I said, it's completely just a psychological mentality. But now it goes away. And so that's, you know, for the minority of folks who probably share this feeling with me, but like I said, I know there's a couple, you know, just doesn't feel good. And the thing that seems to be making that happen is, you know, a desire to be more lucrative, I guess. I mean, it, you know, a lot of it feels like, you know, nickel and diming is too much. Certainly the way that the Smash Bros. Or the Mario Kart DLC was priced was extremely fair for what you were getting. So a lot of it, you know, outside of like the costumes for Smash Brothers, a lot of it feels adequately priced. So it's not that there's a value question, but it's just, it causes kind of this push and pull where you're like, okay, you know, all right, this seems fine. You know, we'll let this slide. I understand. But, you know, which ones are you going to try to get money out of me unfairly about? And I don't like having to even ask that question. You know, I just want to think nothing but good thoughts about this company, because mm-hmm. before they never gave me reason not to. It's just, you know, it's just kind of having to wonder. I don't enjoy having to look for like, oh, is this reasonable, or is this a cash grab, or is this over the line, or what? You know, and that used to be something that, you know, I used to be very proud about with Nintendo, is you could say definitively, you know, that they don't do anything like that stuff. And when you see them kind of dipping their toes in, you just, you know, just kind of worry for where it's headed. So,
yeah, you know, I appreciate you sharing your viewpoint in quite an elegant way, though. I don't think we've talked about this before. I don't think I've heard you put it in exactly those words, mm-hmm. And I appreciate that. You know, from a debating standpoint, I appreciate that you don't necessarily, that you're not attacking necessarily the content or what they're doing, because I feel like it's. I don't know, unfair for people to attack the hard work that they're putting into these different additions. Mm-hmm. You know, again, the Mario Kart stuff and the new characters in Smash Brothers, I'm very excited for. And to me, I take it from the perspective of lengthening the excitement value and the life of games that, you know, eventually will die for me. Like, even Brawl, I've played it a little bit, but that game died after a certain point. Animal Crossing already has died for me for this generation, and I will definitely start back up with a new one, but this is a way to elongate that, you know, like Silly Putty, to stretch it out, and I really appreciate that. For me, the price is where that debate happens, and I'm not so much worried about it existing, but I can totally appreciate what you say about the lack of a cohesive package, because one thing I love about the older generations is that when I had my N64 cart, I took it anywhere and had everything on it.
Uh-huh.
And now, like, when I take, and this exact thing happened with Mario Kart, so I love those new stages, but when I go to my girlfriend's house and I want to play Smash or Mario Kart with her, I have to bring my whole damn system just so we can play the levels that we really love, because she wants to play the new ones too, and I can't just bring the disc.
Yeah, and even setting up this Smash Brothers, the charity tournament, it's like, okay, yeah, do you have Mewtwo? Like, are you gonna have that in time? You know, did you buy both copies? Okay, because, you know, some people are probably gonna want to play as that character, so, you know.
Mm-hmm. And so there is just the detachment, and when the next generation goes, and I, you know, in three generations from now, and I pop in good old Smash for the Wii U, am I going to be able to get Lucas anymore? When I, you know, I kind of now want to get him, but it's just so far past, and the servers are down, and and if my Wii U burns up in a fire, you know, but the disc doesn't, am I going to be able to get my digital content back onto the system? And so it definitely, maybe maybe, you know, it's a good thing, all this extra, the ways that they're finding new life into these games, but the systems aren't set in place to allow you to still own it in the same ways that you used to. And maybe there isn't a digital version of that at all. And I would like to hope that there is someday, but, Nintendo is definitely behind as far as, you know, unified account systems, and they're working towards that. But even, you know, Steam and other guys aren't fully there yet either, not in the same way anyway. Steam probably is the most as far as closest, because they're strictly digital, but I mean, it's definitely, it's a concern I can appreciate, and
I get that there are, you know, many people who could not care less about this stuff, you know, about the, you know, worried about, like, oh, am I going to have access to this content in 10 years? For a lot of people, it's like, dude, why would you want to? There's going to be a better one to play in 10 years. Who gives a blank? You know? But I mean, I get that. It's just different preferences, you know? I mean,
but at the same time, you know, there's better Marios now, right, in theory, but we still go back and play old ones. You know, there's a reason to go back to old games, and maybe with DLC it's not necessarily the case, but when I play Mario Kart 8, you know, down the line, I'm going to want to play those DLC levels, and if there's, for some reason, not a way to do that, it's going to feel like I lost something when I still own the disc.
Exactly. So. And, I'm just someone who has always enjoyed going back and playing old games. I mean, I don't think I mentioned it on the podcast, but just a couple weeks ago, I played the Dick Tracy NES game with a friend of mine for the first time. You know, I'd never played it before.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, it's a very flawed game, but we had fun in part because of some of the flaws and everything. And that's an experience that, you know, I just don't know that you'll be able to do that in another 15 or 20 years, because it'd be like, oh, yeah, you know, maybe we can play the first 90% of the game, or you know most of the cases, but you know, one of them would have been DLC that's not available or something like that.
Right.
And I also completely get the point that I do hear a lot about extending the life of the games in terms of the way, you know, as you kind of alluded to, had Mario Kart 8 come out and that been it, then all of the excitement would have been last summer, and it might, you know, it might be harder to get people to form a match this summer, you know, but now there's going to be that new, you know, recharge of energy towards that game. So, you know, even though this sounds ridiculous, just to sort of put some of the mentality in perspective, a perfect compromise for someone like myself would be have all that stuff on the disc and then say, you know, it unlocks after a certain time period or something, you know, because then sort of everyone gets what they're looking for in that one regard, right? I get all the content in one place, other people get it doled out, you know, over time.
Mm-hmm.
Like that would be fine. That would be a perfect solution. Like there's no part of me that's like, oh, I want it all immediately so that I can just burn through it or anything like that. But yeah.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because that I've heard that argument before, and I think in the end it ends up being flawed because of just what's out there from a technology standpoint. So if you have everything on the disc, it can be hacked, it can be stolen. You know, people who don't earn it, or if it even is an earning thing, but if it's a time release thing, while everyone else is waiting patiently, other people find their way around it, and then you know, that causes imbalance issues there. But also, I would definitely believe that the teams didn't have the DLC ready for Mario Kart at the launch. And I wouldn't want them to have held Mario Kart 8 back till this summer just to make sure they can get all that in. And then even if there's more coming, like, when do you finally release the game? Would they have had to put down the fighter ballot, you know, for Smash Brothers, you know, when the game was first announced, and then, you know, just put in 75 characters, or is it better to dole them out? So it's tough. And go ahead.
Well, yeah, now we're tumbling even further down the rabbit hole. Because it's, you know, then it's the age-old question of, like, when is a game done? You know, like any art, it never, ever has to be done. You know, people can work on music albums and indefinitely, you know, tweaking things, adding things, and such. So,
and that's kind of what the DLC does. But yet, I guess because the way that we earn, you know, we hold on to it, it's separated. So it never feels like part of the cohesive whole for some people, you know. And maybe maybe there's never going to be a fix, and this is just the awkward life we live now. But
yeah, and so going back to, you know, what I said up front, it was nice during the last generation having Nintendo sort of not doing that in the face of some of the other companies doing it. And I certainly, you know, was wondering how long that could last. You know, seems to be just about until now. So,
yeah, you know, I mean, the gaming industry's been around for, you know, over 30 years now, and you know, maybe this is just something that's gonna happen, and maybe it only will affect us who are our age, because we kind of grew up in just at that time, you know. So maybe like you were saying, I think you were alluding to this before, but certain, you know, younger kids, younger generations just don't give an F, you know.
Right.
This is just how they're used to it. I mean, their iPhones and their Android phones, I mean, their games that they play on the mobile platforms come in pieces. You know, Candy Crush sends them new levels every damn couple of weeks. Actually, what worries me more about, you know, as we talk about this, is not so much the DLC as Mario Kart, Hyrule Warriors, Smash, Amiibo, all those things have done it, but how, like, Pokemon Shuffle's doing it. Because that just, not only is it like, I mean, it's free, it's just, I don't even know how to explain it right, but, and I'm having a lot of fun with Pokemon Shuffle, but I still hate that it's just like limited to play times, you know? It's like my mother is saying, you can only play this for this long today.
Right.
And then yet they have these kind of fun, contests. One is going on right now, you know, for that special item, and only 20,000 people are gonna get it. And will they ever release it again? Who knows? But, that will be gone forever if I don't earn that. Right. And even though it really doesn't mean shit, because it's just a video game, it's just a little gem in a video game, and it allows you to have a certain special power, like the Lucarioite that I got or whatever. But if I missed that Lucario night or whatever, I'd be really pissed about it. I made sure that I was in that top 20,000. And and I thought it wasn't going to be that big of a deal, like, okay, 80,000 people would play it, so, you know, it's a quarter of the people. But I'm pretty sure it went over 200,000 people by the time that week was done. So only, you know, less than 10% ended up being able to get that. And that's shitty that only 10% of the fan base has the opportunity to get something. I mean, I guess we all did have the opportunity, but not everyone's good enough. Or some people just got the game that day, on the last day, and then they don't get an equal opportunity to earn it. While with DLC, at least, you know, everyone has a chance to buy the same thing. And, you know, so that's why I have more of an issue with the way Pokemon Shuffle is doing things. And I'd rather just pay for the whole game and then just get it.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so that's where I stand.
And I also feel like, you know, we're kind of in somewhat of a growing pains while all these different approaches are getting tried out. But I guess the other thing that makes me feel a little less hopeful or less optimistic about the whole issue is I don't see like a progression towards a like just a new method that everyone uses. I feel like it's just kind of always going to be like you're going to see a game and be interested in it content wise, and then you're going to have to wonder, okay, which like business model are they using? And that's almost going to be like, you know how games used to be rated on like graphics, sound, whatever. There's going to be like graphics, sound, and release method or something, because people are going to have different tastes for how they want to play that game. And I just, you know, it's a little concerning that it's going to be another something that maybe, you know, will turn you off about a game. You might love the content, but the actual delivery method might be one that you do not like. So,
I don't know. Well, let's, we had a great discussion so far. There is more to talk about, and so I think we'll continue this again. But, Andrew, is there anything you want to add about DLC before we move on?
Well, like I said, I'm not typically a fan. I've only bought a small handful of DLC over the years and all the games I own. So it really has to be, like, something special. But as far as, like, if it's not, I'll just skip it. I'm fine with that. So that part doesn't worry me. But it does make me wonder, you know, there are like a couple pitfalls I think we can fall into. One is if a developer actually withheld something just to sell the DLC. And it's hard to say whether they, I mean, I don't think they did Mario Kart, for instance. That game seems to have as much content as any other game. And Smash definitely has a ton of content. So I don't think this, you know, is the case here. But the other thing that sort of just worries me is like the retailer exclusive DLC, and really hope Nintendo doesn't go into that, where if you'll pre-order GameStop to get some cool thing, but you know, you could get something else if you pre-order somewhere else, and you'd have to actually buy the game twice to get both of them. Or
they've done that a little bit with Hyrule Warriors, because depending on where you got a code for an outfit. However, you at least could buy the outfit later, you know.
Yeah, I really don't like that retailer exclusive.
Oh, I don't either.
Retailer exclusive. I know it's the future. It's like hard to ignore now.
Oh, I wouldn't even call it the future. I feel like they're forcing that. There's no reason to me. Like, I see there to be a logical progression to, you know, strengthen the length of how long a game can entertain you, but there's no like consumer benefit to fucking retailer exclusivity. So I think that needs to die in a fire for sure.
The problem, though, is these decisions aren't made for consumers.
Absolutely correct.
Yeah, that's
because
it.
Because someone's making money, and they've realized that's a way to make money. But
so I'm going to start, you know, Steve-co and be a retailer exclusive for myself.
But Andrew, you can make your retailer-specific parts of your game at Steve-co.
Yeah.
I think if I was going to, like, rant even more and get, like, a rant on, like, all the people who run out to pre-order things, but I would get, like, 90% people angry, so
well,
I'll just hold off on that for now.
The next part of our conversation, well, some conversation that we have left to discuss will lead us there. So let's jump into some other things, some less deep things, I guess we could say, about the Nintendo Direct, because that happened, right? That's what we're talking about here?
Okie dokie!
Whoa, whoa, whoa there, Steven. Wait 1 minute. If you haven't noticed, this episode is already well over 2 hours long, and there's still another 2.5 hours of content left. That's why future you decided to split this discussion up into two episodes, which not only leaves more chatter to come, but it also means episode 74 gets a sudden disruption as it's ending.
Yahoo!
Thanks to all you who have listened to the episode. We've had some now playing, and we've finally discussed DLC in the context of the Super Smash Bros. News. Coming up in episode 75, you'll expect to hear discussions on Mario Maker, Yoshi's Woolly World, Splatoon, and much more. You'll hear me dive headfirst into the Amiibo fiasco from early April, while Andrew and Joe do their best to convince me to quit this whole Amiibo business. They might make some valid points. We'll touch on the upcoming Shin Megami Tensei Fire Emblem crossover, Fatal Frame 5, and other titles as well, so please stay tuned. On the plus side, you can bet your bottom bell that episode 75 will start off with an equally awkward intro. So go find us on Negative World, Twitter, Facebook, etc. But most of all, go find the link to Joe's Smash charity event in the show notes for this episode and donate. Every penny, every dime, every dollar goes to help a child smile and find happiness in ways that these games make you feel. The difference is that the children of Child's Play are in hospitals around the world fighting to overcome hardships. Your donations help fund games, toys, books, and other means to make this fight a bit easier. The website where you can find more information and have the opportunity to donate is citadel.sjfc.edu/faculty/jloprocaro/index.html. And whether you donate or not, you should be sure to watch the live stream of the event on April 18th at 1 p.m. Eastern. The link for that is www.twitch.tv/sjfc_smash. Thanks and have a great week.